better in the hood. They're not. And by corrupting children and giving them a false promise, they're hurting those children. So take the anger, do it another way, and that's the American way. We appreciate the call. Look, I want to thank WTKK-FM Talk 96.9 for being a great host here in Boston. Thank you all, ladies and gentlemen, for coming out to see me. All right? Up with Boston!
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein is straight ahead. It's 12 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Partly cloudy and 59 degrees. I'm Chris Gallegos. This report brought to you by Sweet Tomatoes. A 25-year-old is in the hospital after a crazy morning likely to land her behind bars. Denver Police Detective Teresa Garcia said at about 9 a.m., officers stopped a woman driving a stolen vehicle at Dartmouth and Federal. The driver fled and in doing so ran over an officer's foot. The woman driving a Dodge Neon headed east on Dartmouth, then ran into a Ford Expedition at Zuni. Garcia says this woman could face a series of charges.
The original charge is driving a stolen vehicle. Probably a fault to a police officer for injuring the officer, also eluding, disobeying a lawful order.
The driver of the Expedition was not hurt, but 35-year-old passenger Denise Gonzalez was seriously injured and taken to Denver Health. The driver was taken to Denver Health as well, as was the officer whose foot was run over. He's not believed to be seriously injured. Well, over the last week, Children's Hospital in Denver has received up to 100 kids a day with flu-like symptoms. Plenty of kids have missed school in Larimer and Weld County as well. Dr. Ken Gershman with the State Health Department says the flu can strike any time between October and March, and this one's hit the metro area relatively early.
It's an early season, but flu has the ability to come early or late or any time during October through March, and it has come a little bit earlier than usual, and it's definitely here, and it's hitting hard.
Gershman says if you get immunized in the next few days, do remember it takes a few more days to get into your system. This means you're exposed to the flu before the vaccine has taken hold. You won't be protected. Colorado State Treasurer Mike Hoffman meets today with the legislature's Joint Budget Committee to pitch the concept of selling future tobacco payments. That means Colorado could get a lump sum payment of between $800 and $900 million. However, such a move is tantamount to blowing smoke in the faces of the state's anti-smoking advocates, who want the money earmarked for tobacco prevention programs. The state has budgeted just under $4 million for such programs in the next fiscal year, which is roughly 15% of the amount recommended by the Center for Disease Control. Republican Representative Bob Beaupre plans to join a bipartisan congressional delegation which is headed to Iraq. They're going to meet with American troops and also with some of the Iraqi people, seeing firsthand the way things are working in the war-torn country. And more bad news out of Iraq this morning. Two American soldiers were killed when a bomb went off at a U.S. military convoy driving along a road near Baghdad. The military announced the deaths today. The soldiers were taken from Task Force Iron Horse. Their deaths raised the toll to at least 158, the number of U.S. soldiers killed in hostile action since major combat was declared over in Iraq on May 1st. In sports, the Avs dropped a heartbreaker last night to the Coyotes, losing 3-2 in overtime. The Coyotes pulled a page from the Avs book, coming back from a two-goal deficit. The Avs are back in action tomorrow night, hosting the Dallas Stars at 7 p.m. at the Pepsi Center. And sports fans in Colorado will get their fill this weekend, as all the local teams have action slated. The Nuggets kick off action tonight with a game at the Pepsi Center at 8:30, and the CU Lady Buffaloes host Old Dominion at the Coors Event Center at 8:15. Tomorrow, college football is on the slate. CU Buffs are in Ames, the Air Force Falcons are New Mexico, and CSU hosts San Diego State at Aztec, the San Diego State Aztecs at Hughes Stadium. This report brought to you by Sweet Tomatoes. This week, Sweet Tomatoes has new Mexican corn tortilla soup brimming with shredded chicken, corn, tomatoes, and new Mexican chilies. It'll fire up your taste buds only at Sweet Tomatoes. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 12:04.
It's the 27th annual L'Esprit de Noël Holiday Home Tour and Boutique. Tour five beautiful homes in Denver's Country Club Historic District, all decorated for the holidays by some of Denver's finest designers and florists. The tour runs Thursday through Saturday, November 20th through 22nd. Parking is available at Calvary Temple, 200 South University Boulevard, with buses to the tour homes. Tickets at King Supers for $13 or at the door for $15. Presented by the Central City Opera House Association Guild.
Hi, I'm Enid Goldstein. Join me this Thursday morning at Starbucks 16th and Tremont from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. I'll be there kicking off Holiday Angel
KNRC News Time.
Benefit the Starlight Children's Foundation. Stop by with a new unwrapped toy or pick up an ornament off the tree for ideas on what to buy. All toys will be donated to the Starlight Children's Foundation, brightening the world of seriously ill children in Colorado. So do something generous and bring a new unwrapped toy to Starbucks 16th and Tremont this Thursday morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. See you there.
Talk to Greg Dobbs.
The Bush administration is seeking to block a group of American troops who were tortured in Iraqi prisons during the Persian Gulf War in 91 from collecting any of the hundreds of millions of dollars in frozen Iraqi assets that they won last summer in federal court. You believe it? That says it all right there. Bush, isn't he the guy who says he's for the American soldier? It's all lip service.
Greg Dobbs, weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on AM 1150 KNIC.
KPI Channel 12 is your public television source for reliable public affairs and international news programming every day of the week. Unafraid of dissent and debate, KPDI Channel 12 features diverse perspectives on local issues and challenges our viewers to be a voice in their own community through Colorado's only television viewer call-in shows. Tune in every Wednesday night for Colorado Inside Out Live and join the line with Reggie Rivers. And don't miss BBC World News weeknights only on KPDI Channel 12, your worldview and community voice.
This KNRC traffic report is brought to you by Diamond Shamrock Corner Stores. I'm Darren Copeland. Watch for a bit of a problem on C.
KNRC News Time is 12:06.
I watch for an accident at tractor trailer westbound C-470 after Santa Fe. Jackknife semi there. Watch for traffic lights not working in the Capitol Hill area. Northbound I-25 between Orchard and Bellevue. We have an accident there. Zip into your neighborhood Diamond Shamrock Corner Store and pick up Pepsi and Dr. Pepper 12-packs, two for just $5.99. Diamond Shamrock, drive in, zip out. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Stephanie DeLuca with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. A winter weather advisory for the mountains above 9,000 feet today. That's issued by the National Weather Service. Be careful if you're traveling in that area. We're going to see a bright, sunny day, though. Grab the sunglasses. High of 58. Tonight, clear down to 28. 56. Sunshine comes back for tomorrow and for Sunday. Partly to mostly cloudy. Highs in the 50s. For the Weather Channel, I'm Stephanie DeLuca on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now, the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC.
7 minutes after 12 o'clock. Welcome to the Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. The theme this Friday, Literary Colorado. And we have a roster of fabulous guests that are going to join us. We'll be joined by Sybil Downing, and we're going to be joined by John Dunning. And later in the broadcast, we'll be joined by Pete Dexter, who won the National Book Award for Paris Trout. And there's Stephanie Kane, Phil Goodstein, lots of people. We're going to begin with somebody who's an old friend and has been on the show before, Sybil Downing. She writes historical fiction, right. And it was your grandfather or your great-grandfather who owned the Rocky Mountain News? How long ago was that, Sybil?
Oh, back in the 1890s.
Can we hear Sybil? Let's see if that's... Go ahead.
Back in the 1890s and early part of the 20th century.
Sybil, we've been having technical problems, so put your headphones on. Now can you hear yourself? Can we hear Sybil?
Yes.
Is Sybil coming through? Okay.
Well, that's much better.
In the 1890s.
And turn of the century.
Turn of the century. Okay.
Right.
All right. And you have been writing historical fiction for how long?
Oh, about 20 years. I started out writing for young adults and children and then turned to writing for big people, adults. And that's been fun. It's a whole different way of approaching history, but it's fun.
Tell us the last book you've done. Give us, I know you were on and we've talked about
right.
it. Tell me the last book that you...
It's The Binding Oath, which is about the Ku Klux Klan in Colorado. And that was in the 1920s. And John Dunning, who's sitting next to me, also wrote a book about the Ku Klux Klan in Denver. So it's
we were going
right
to do
there.
We were going to do both of you sort of one after the other. But since you're old friends, let's introduce John Dunning. John,
hello
and welcome. Tell us about yourself, John.
I've been writing forever, and I've reached a point now where I just. I just put it in gear and let it run. I wrote about Denver 20 some years ago.
How did you become a writer?
Pardon me, I'm getting my earphones. You know,
Joe, is everybody?
I'm fine.
Be heard?
I can hear myself just fine now.
Thank you.
And never anybody asked me that. I always love to give them that line from Burl Ives, who was asked when he became a singer, and he said there wasn't any beginning. I can remember when I was a kid wanting to write before I knew how to write. I mean, that's the only thing I ever wanted to do, except for other stuff that I was just kind of side things, you know. Like I wanted to be a baseball player. Well, you know how that turned out.
So at what point, I mean, what was the trajectory of your life that you finally began to be able to do it? Do you do something else? I mean, I guess writers often have to have day jobs in order to be able to write.
Or working wives,
that's true, or trust funds.
I don't know whether it was a time when I suddenly was able to do it. I'm not sure I'm able to do it yet. I just get in and hope for the best.
And Sybil, how did you come to become a fiction writer? What was the arc of your life? I know you talked to us about it. But
I think I really started in my great passion for history, and particularly for what's gone on in Colorado, because I'm a fourth generation, even though I grew up in New York City. Colorado has really been in my heart, and I became so fascinated with the history of it. I grew up hearing stories about it from my mother and my grandfather and so on. So I just figured I had to start writing initially for children, as I said, because I told my own kids the stories. And, you know, one thing leads to another.
How long ago did you get started?
Oh, it's been about 20 years or so ago. Yeah,
I mean, I know you went back to school later in life.
Right, I did.
And you got married and had a family,
right.
And then you went back to school to get your degree,
I
and
did.
You got your degree in.
And geography.
Geography. So, well, at least you know where you are, which is more than many of us could say. So you get your degree in geography. Your kids are now, what, grown up? Wasn't your daughter in school around the same time you were?
Yes, they were. Yes, it was really kind of fun because the kids in class with me were my kids' age. The professors had been enough time elapsed since the World War II veterans came back on the GI Bill, and the professors had kind of forgotten what it was like to have an ancient 40-some in the classroom, you know.
Well, in some of our cases, 40-some refers to our IQ, but we're not going there.
That's right.
So now you're in school, you're getting your degree in geography, and did you know all the time that you were pursuing your degree in geography that you were going to actually forget about geography and write, or
no,
maybe use
actually,
your geography in the writing?
That's true. I'd already started writing for kids. I had a minor in history, if that counts. But, I was just fascinated with geography. I mean, I kind of believe that perhaps education is wasted on the young.
Now, how do you two know each other, you and John Dunning?
Just different things. We run into each other at things like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've always enjoyed John's work. I admire what he does.
All right, now give us sort of a history. You started out writing kids' books. How many did you write? Children's books?
13.
13 children's books.
Yeah.
Did they have a historical component
in
them?
Yes, they're all historical.
And they're all historically accurate.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So all 13 books. Yes. And then you make the leap to writing for adults.
Yes.
And what prompts you to make that leap?
Well, actually, I kind of cheated because I wrote a biography in between. And doing research for the biography, I discovered a piece of information that led me to want to write a novel about it. So I'm not sure that makes sense. But,
no, I can understand that. What was the piece of information? What biography were you writing?
I was actually writing about my great-grandfather, and I discovered that he had been asked, when he just left the Senate, he'd been asked to mediate a terrible strike that was going on at the time in 1913 down in the southern part of the state. In fact, it's one of the worst strikes this country's ever had, and I knew nothing about it, and I was totally intrigued. So
tell us who your great-grandfather was.
His name was Tom Patterson, a nice Irish name.
And he was in the Senate, and he also owned the Rocky Mountain News.
Yes, and he was the state's first congressman, and he was a territorial representative to Congress, you know, all that stuff. So I just found it. He was an interesting guy. And
You never knew him, I take it?
No. So, you know, that's how things kind of go. I don't know. John's so fascinates me because of his connection with books in the general. He's probably the best expert around.
Why, John?
I pose as
you're in the right profession then.
Well, for 20-some years, we've been antiquarian booksellers.
Oh, you and your wife. I did not know that. Okay.
We owned the bookstore. And
what's it called?
It was called the Old Algonquin Bookstore. It was at the corner of Colfax and Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And we dealt in so-called used, rare, and scarce books.
First editions. Out-of-print books.
Yeah. Yeah. And some that were not so out-of-print, yeah.
And that went well? Or went very decently?
I don't know how you would, you know, like Bill Clinton would say, that depends on what well is, you know? I mean,
what is this? What is this?
We would have a hard time making a living at it if she didn't hold down a job at the same time. But
so books have been a grand passion of yours.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so now you always knew that you were going to be a writer.
Well, I always thought I would try.
You would try. And at what point does it become actualized?
When you start selling your stuff.
Well, when do you start putting pen to paper? All the way through, even in childhood, you were writing things.
I would go to the movies with my grandmother and come home and rewrite the film. How about that for a piece of arrogance?
<That's good. laughs> All right. And then you go to school.
Up to a point. I went to the 10th grade.
Did you?
Yeah.
And that's as far as you got? You did not bother to graduate from high school?
Yeah, it wasn't a question of bothering. I left by mutual consent.
You were invited. You were invited. Include me out.
I left and wasn't invited back.
You were not invited back. So now, with a 10th grade education and no career yet established, I mean, when you're a sophomore in high school, it's hard to have an established career as a writer. How do you make a living? What do you do?
I started in a glass shop in Charleston, cutting glass. And I broke a lot of glass before I learned how to cut it. And
yeah.
Then I got very good at it. After 2 or 3 years, you either do or you don't. And
so cutting glass for windows, windshields, mm-hmm. that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay. And you learned a trade as a glass cutter, mm-hmm. and you're still writing, you're cutting glass.
Mm-hmm. I'd come home at night and write, and the clatter of my typewriter kept my folks awake. And then I went to work on the racetrack out here at Centennial.
Doing what?
Rubbing horses, taking to groom. I was a hot walker and then a groom. And I went.
Tell us what is a hot walker, because I always use the expression, although I probably am using it incorrectly, when President Bush led us to war, he got hot walked on one side by Rummy and the other side by Cheney, and they hot walked him right into Iraq.
Never heard that. Did you ever?
What is a hot walker?
A hot walker is a guy who takes a hot horse and cools him down, walks him around in circles until he, I think that's apt. You put a blanket on it.
I thought it's somebody who grabs you one elbow at the one side and one at the other, and you know, and sort of zooms you in the direction that they want to go.
No, you cool the horse down and then you put him away, put him in his stall.
So you did it for how many years?
Oh, only about a year and a half, 2 years, but it was great.
And you're still writing at this time, during this time?
I used to haul my big manual typewriter from one tack room to the other, from state to state.
Uh-huh. From race to race?
From racetrack to racetrack.
So you would go from you didn't just stay here in Centennial. You would go from racetrack to racetrack.
Yeah. I was back here in 65 in time for the flood, 64, 65.
And then what do you do after that? What do you do after the racetrack?
I went back home with my tail between my legs. And
To mom and dad?
Yeah. And then I went back to the glass shop, feeling like a real failure. But I had to get away from there. And I told them, I said, well, I'm going to go out to Denver and get a job at the Denver Post.
And
they said, you're crazy. And I came out here and and got a job at the Denver Post.
At the Denver Post?
I had to take whatever they had, which was basically, it was less than a copy boy. I was a sub-copy boy. I worked in the library.
Is there anything lower than a copy boy? Or copy
I worked in the library part-time, and then I worked as a copy boy part-time.
And what did copy boy do? You know, I had Jimmy Breslin on one day, and he said, now when you go into the waiting room, you know, reporters applying, they're all from all the Ivy League schools. And he didn't like that. Doesn't like that trend. Because people used to come to newspapers who were really willing to work hard. They didn't go to Ivy League schools. They really were willing to pound the pavement and not try to sup with the people that they were covering.
I worked very hard. I lived and breathed it. And I got a job as a reporter.
How long were you a sub-copy boy before finally
being a reporter? About a year.
A year?
I answered the phones at in the Post Library. They used to have a service called Post Information where you call the Denver Post and you get the answer to anything.
Like a reference librarian?
Mm-hmm. And I was Post Information.
What was the worst question you were ever asked?
God, I don't remember.
There had to be something really juicy.
You know, what was the name of Hopalong Cassidy's horse? You'd get asked that. Of course, I knew that.
What was the name of Hopalong Cassidy?
It was Topper.
Topper?
Yeah.
I was going to say Trigger, but that's wrong. How about
you?
You know, he stuffed.
Wrong
cat boy. They stuffed Trigger and put him up in the museum, in the Roy Rogers Museum.
Anybody who would stuff Trigger is a bad cowboy.
Well, you're lucky they didn't stuff Roy and Dale. Or how can we tell the difference? My guess, two wonderful writers, Sybil Downing and John Dunning. We are coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. This is the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Get your side, get their side. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
Puppetry of the Penis, the international hit comedy that everyone is talking about.
It was hysterical. I haven't laughed that hard in a really long time.
Inspiring.
Funny. Very good. Nothing I haven't seen before, but very good. It was hysterical. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. Entertaining. It was great to bring my husband, one of the few men here, to dine. It was great.
It looked painful.
These two naked Aussies achieve a lunatic virtuosity, sending audiences into hysterics in New York and London. Now Denver audiences are roaring with laughter. The Penis extends to the new Denver Civic Theater, 721 Santa Fe Drive. A once-in-a-lifetime experience. It's hard to resist the good-natured silliness, raves variety. Don't miss this hilarious phenomenon. The Philadelphia Inquirer raves it's good, clean fun.
Hurry and get your tickets to Puppetry of the Penis. The last performance in Denver is November 23rd. Select fast.
Suppose you can imagine the guy sitting next to you just crossing his legs going, no, no, no.
Puppetry of the Penis. Reserve seats on sale now at Tickets West Outlets, TicketsWest.com, and the Denver Civic Theater box office. It's like nothing you've ever seen.
How would you like to spend your next vacation with Brad Paisley, Bill Anderson, Little Jimmy Dickens, and Ricky Skaggs? Come along with the Grand Ole Opry. The Opry cruise is sailing to Grand Cayman, Cozumel, and other destinations in the Caribbean this January, and you can be aboard, courtesy of Banquet Home Style Banks. Just visit www.countrystars.com for more information. That's www.countrystars.com. Brought to you by America's favorite meal, Banquet Home Style Banks.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Shopify.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway!
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
How would you like to win tickets to the most controversial show in town? If you haven't seen the outrageous live hit, Puppetry of the Penis, now is your chance to do so for free. Just go to www.knrcradio.com and click on Contest. Fill out the form and you could be one of 10 winners to get a free pair of tickets to the Wednesday, November 19th performance of Puppetry of the Penis. So go to www.knrcradio.com now and register to win and see it for free from AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Dominic Brascia.
And I'm Bill Thorpe.
Join us weeknights from 6 to 9 here on AM 1150 KNRC.
Now back to Enid Goldstein.
12:23 on the fabulous Friday edition of Eat It Live. I'm yours till 3 o'clock, live from the Denver Press Club. The theme of this month's Press Club show is Literary Colorado. We have a whole roster of authors and people who are connected with books in one way or another. Later we'll be joined by Rick Ashton, who's director of the Denver Public Library, and we'll be also joined by Pete Dexter, one of whose books, Paris Trout, won the National Book Award. Phil Goodstein will be joining us. Right now, Sybil Downing, who writes historical fiction, and John Dunning are both with us. And we've been talking a lot about how they came to become writers. John Dunning also had a radio show called...
Old Time Radio.
Mm-hmm. And you worked on a Robert Altman film.
I worked on a Robert Altman film called Thieves Like Us.
And you provided the soundtrack.
Yeah, the gangsters were all holed up in Mississippi, and the radio was always on. It was 1937, and I gave him the shows that that he used as background.
So you and the film was done when, in the 70s at some point?
Yeah,
in the 70s. So you went back to find the ambient sound that would work for the...
Well, I have those. I have 40,000 shows.
How do you have them? Did you yourself record them, or did you get them from some of those central sources?
I'm a real animal. I mean, what can I say? I started and couldn't stop. And some of the stuff is wonderful. I mean, you know, once you've heard The Lone Ranger, you've heard it over and over and over. But The Shadow, it's all the same show. But some of these things are just great.
Really?
Yeah, you'd be surprised.
I wish you would do that again. There's got to be a way to put that stuff back on radio. I mean, there's Stan Freberg when radio was. But I take it what you're doing is much more complete than that.
I didn't cut any of the commercials on.
How do you both write? Sybil, you just accused John of writing manually by hand.
That's
pencil,
right.
Pencil and paper.
Yes, that's what I swear he told me that once.
And he denies it.
Now he does.
I may have told her that.
Are you both on computer? Is that what you're both doing now?
I do. I'm on the commute.
And you too, John?
I'm ashamed to admit it, but I have had to do it.
No more hauling rat manual typewriter around. No. All right. You have both written books on similar subjects on the KKK.
Correct.
What's the name of your book, Sybil?
The Binding Oath.
That's right. The most recent one, The Binding Oath. Right.
Mine is just called Denver, and it's long out of print.
And they are both historical fiction on the same subject.
Yeah.
So it would be very interesting for someone who wanted to know more about that time to read both of your views of it.
I think so. Yes. I first read John's book before I ever started mine. And I figured, I was wondering, what am I going to repeat what he had to say, and I decided no, I wasn't, because it's a whole different deal. So it works. I mean, there are a lot of books written on the same subject.
Oh, sure.
You know,
zillions on the Civil War, for
example. Exactly. I think there are 2,500 or something that have been written on the Civil War.
Hmm. What are you working on now?
I'm starting to write a book about the child labor laws that were passed in the 1913, 1914, and then subsequently overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court.
When were they overturned?
1920.
But there are child labor laws now.
Yes.
In place, and in fact...
These were national labor laws. I mean, states had labor laws, child labor laws, and labor laws that were specific to women. They were very rarely enforced, but nevertheless, they were on the books.
What interested you about attempting a historical fiction, I assume, that has as its core child labor laws?
Well, I became interested, oddly enough. I was going to write a mystery set in Colorado. I don't know how John's ideas come, but it. For some reason that now escapes me, I became interested in the German Russians, who sometimes are called the Volga Deutsch. They were Germans who were persuaded by Catherine the Great to come and farm in the Volga region of Russia and live there until the 1880s and then emigrated to the United States. And they were marvelous hard workers, just expert farmers and all the rest. And a great many of them settled in northeastern Colorado, and they raised sugar beets.
Oh.
I had no idea about German Russians. I didn't know such a group of people existed. I became interested in them, and one of the things I found out was that they used children, their children, big time. They wouldn't let them go to school. This was in the early days.
So this is in the, around the turn of the century.
Right.
Because, you know, it's an issue now with the Amish.
Exactly.
The Amish want to use their kids in there. Amish now have moved to Colorado, but not simply in Colorado, but in other places where they're well established. They want an exemption from the child labor laws because they're living a different kind
that's
of life.
Right.
And it's an interesting moral question as to whether or not
it is indeed.
What do you think about it? If I were to ask you off the top of your head, if you want to, I mean, are the kids, were the kids so deprived that they had no life other than just the, in the fields raising those sugar beets?
Well, the German Russians had a very strong family ethic, and so the children were loved and cared for and so on, but they were certainly used, and they had a very definite, you know, it's not like now, it was true at the time in lots of cultures, the father was it and you did what he told you, and if you went out and worked someplace else at the age of 15 or 16, he had took your wages. So it was a different time.
It was a real patriarchal,
absolutely,
kind of family structure.
Yeah.
Well, now they're wearing earrings, more perfume than women, and sometimes skirts too. John, what are you working on now?
A mystery novel.
Is it your first mystery, or you've written a number of mysteries?
I've done, I don't know, half a dozen mysteries. That's about all I do now.
How did you make the transition? You were writing, historical fiction? And then...
No, I started writing mysteries. I wrote a mystery, and then I wrote another mystery, and then I wrote another one, and then finally I wrote this historical novel.
And then you went back to mysteries.
Then I went to nonfiction and did a couple of those, and then I went back to mysteries. And
of all those different types of work that you have done, do you have a favorite, or is it your favorite as you're working? The thing that you're working on is your favorite at that moment. Do you prefer doing mysteries? Is that where you feel most comfortable, or does it matter?
You feel restricted by doing mysteries. You're bound to a formula, and you know if you try to break out of that formula, it can be really hard. And because even if you do it successfully in the literary sense, they won't buy it.
What's the formula for writing mystery? I always wanted to write a mystery, but I think you have to have. See, I have no sense of. See, I think I could not write a mystery. I'll tell you why. And I should put out my meager credentials here. I began life, and I like to think I continue it as a writer, but I really don't because I don't have time. But I occasionally do review books and used to do it for the San Francisco Chronicle. But I think to write a good mystery, you have to have a sense of direction. And in life, you know, driving from point A to point B, I don't know how I get there.
I don't either.
Because I don't have that particular dimensional skill that you have to read a map right or to have a spatial, you know. I figure I probably wouldn't be able to write a mystery, though I'd love to do it.
But
don't you have to plot it? What's the formula for writing?
I don't plot it. My friend Jack Kissling, who worked for the Post for many years, used to say to write any kind of novel, you have to go way out there where there isn't anything, and then you got to lasso something and bring it back. That's a great quote.
Yeah, that is great.
And the fact of the matter is, I used to plot books out, and I've had success both ways and failures both ways. But the fact of the matter is that I start out now, and I have no idea where I'm going.
A lot of writers tell me that, and I do interview a lot of writers. If you're just joining us, the two who are with us, Sybil Downing and John Dunning. What is the formula for writing? You got to have a dead body right at the open of the book.
That would help. I don't always do that.
But you got to have a dead body somewhere in the book.
A dead body someplace. And then hopefully it isn't the hero.
And then what else? You can't just have someone out of nowhere, out of thin air, be the one who killed. It's got to be someone you've been introduced to somewhere.
Somebody who's introduced, and preferably as soon as possible.
So it's got to be someone early. And okay. And what else do you need when you're writing?
Well, it would help if if you've got a 350-page mystery if they don't guess the answer on page 11. She did that to me one time.
Who's she? Are you pointing to the wife here?
I'm pointing to the...
Mrs. Dunning?
She who must be obeyed. She reads all my stuff, unfortunately, and I handed her a manuscript, and I thought it was really good, and she looked at it, and she said, but the only trouble is I think I know what happened, and she'd only read 11 pages, and then you got to drop back and punt. That's annoying. Doesn't do much to increase domestic tranquility.
In case that isn't an oxymoron to begin with, let me ask you, what is your newest book or your most recent book? The books that we should know about, because this is a time for authors to plug their books.
Well, I have one coming in March. It's called The Bookman's Promise.
And it's a mystery.
Yeah, Scribner is a publisher. It's a mystery, and it's a book mystery.
Ooh, a literary mystery in every sense of the word.
This is the third one of these that I've done.
And is there something we can just hop out to the tatter cover and buy right now?
No, it won't be.
Is there another book? Another book? Right now? We're going to have to wait till March.
There's a book I wrote about a mystery about radio called 2 O'Clock Eastern Wartime. You can find that. There's a...
Was that set in current times or during wartime?
No, it's set in 1941, 42. You can also, if you just want to buy a read and not, don't need a hardback, the first two Bookman books, Book to Die and The Bookman's Wake. And then I think they still got my newspaper mystery Deadline is still in print.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay, well, look for all of those books. And, Sybil, your newest, the most recent is The Binding Oath.
Right.
And what else?
Happens to be a historical mystery, oddly enough. Okay. Yeah.
And the previous book?
The previous book is out of print now, which was Ladies of the Goldfield Stock Exchange. And then the book before that is called Fire in the Hole, and that is in what they call trade paperback. So
Fire in the Hole is all about?
And it is about this terrible strike that I found out about through doing the biography. Yeah. So I've got out of
it. It was one of the bloodiest strikes ever.
Ever. And it's much of the labor legislation that we have on the books today nationally and in most states is all connected. Can be traced back to that strike.
And it was a strike over...
It was in the coal mines, a strike in the coal mines. And there were men from...
Pinkerton coming in?
No, it was just the conditions in the mines. And the United Mine Workers was the union at the time. And the coal was being mined by men from... that spoke 23 different languages. So the coal mine owners used that, and there was a very divisive situation that was going on in the mines and the terrible conditions and all the rest. So I found the whole thing quite amazing, and we would never know about it today if it weren't for women. The women in the coal mines and the, not the coal mines, but the coal towns, and the women in the area were really what made the...
They're the ones who got the word out.
Yes, it was called the Ludlow Massacre because 24 women and children were burned to death and killed by the militia. And it hit the international headlines, and that's what really brought national attention to the conditions.
So in historical fiction, for people who find history or even the thought of history dry, it brings it alive. It makes it vivid. Thank you so much for joining us, Sybil Downing and John Dunning. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to your mystery coming out in March.
Well, thank you.
I'm Enid Goldstein. You are listening to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. We're talking about literary Colorado today. The time, 12:36. And that means it's time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Do you want a warm, comfortable home? Of course. But what are you willing to pay in electricity? How about the same amount as used by a 100-watt bulb? That's what you get with a Carrier WeatherMaker Infinity gas furnace with Comfort Heat technology. Add in what WeatherMaker Infinity saves you on gas, and it's the most totally energy-efficient gas furnace you can buy, based on GAMA-DOE data, with a variable-speed fan that distributes warmth over longer cycles, eliminating drafts and hotspots. WeatherMaker Infinity, it's the most totally energy-efficient gas furnace in the universe. Besides the sun.
Hi, I'm Mike Galloway, president of Best Air Heating and Cooling Systems. Fight back against rising energy costs by installing a high-efficiency Carrier furnace in your home. You'll save up to 50% on your gas bill, and with financing up to 12 months same as cash, you can start saving today. Don't settle for less than the best. Call Mike at Best Air Heating and Cooling Systems, 303-487-8500.
Hi, I'm Enid Goldstein. Get up close and personal with the Colorado Symphony in the only concert hall in America where the music literally becomes the center of attraction. The CSO is offering KNRC listeners 20% off tickets in the Parquet and Mezzanine 1 sections of Betcher Concert Hall for all Masterworks and Super Pops performances. These seats put you practically in the middle of the orchestra. You can watch the conductor's every move and hear the majesty and force of the music build before you.
This weekend, Jose Feliciano is coming to town to perform with your orchestra, the Colorado Symphony Orchestra. See Jose Feliciano perform some of his biggest hits with the CSO on Friday, November 14th and Saturday, November 15th. Tickets available at all King Supers Tickets West outlets and online at coloradosymphony.org.
And to get up close and personal with the CSO, call 303-893-4100. That's 303-893-4100.
KNRC Market Watch.
Plus, it's starting to get deeper this hour. Wall Street's main index is trading at their lows for the session now. The Dow is down 24 points. S&P 500 losing 3. The NASDAQ is down 21. That's more than a full percent loss for the NASDAQ. More mutual fund names now on the list of companies acknowledging improper trading by managers. Charles Schwab says it's the subject of a review by federal regulators, and it's also reviewing itself for signs its funds were traded improperly, specifically after market hours. Right now, stock in Schwab is down 80 cents or 6%. American Express also acknowledging its received requests for information from regulators looking into its fund trading. Amex stock down 40 cents a share. And Prudential says it has received a similar request in the same investigation. Regulators want to see how trading was conducted in Prudential's variable annuity business. Stock in Prudential Financial, down 63 cents. Again, the Dow is down 22. I'm Andrew O'Day, in the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Good afternoon. Partly cloudy and 60 degrees. I'm Chris Gallegos. This report brought to you by the Denver Rescue Mission. The flu is hitting Colorado early and hard this year. Many schools in the metro area have already had to shut down because so many students and teachers are sick. Children's Hospital is seeing up to 100 children a week with the flu. Now, if you haven't had a flu shot, you can still get one, but it takes about 2 weeks for the shots to be effective. A Denver-based crack cocaine ring has been put out of business. The head of the ring, 47-year-old Willie Small of Denver, was found guilty under the drug kingpin statute of operating a continuing criminal enterprise. Small, also known as Pops, faces a mandatory minimum sentence of 20 years behind bars, or he could also get life. The FBI is investigating the contents of four letters, including one letter that was sent to a Denver radio station. The letters contained a powder which tested harmless in each case, but the letters did contain threatening language, similar to the anthrax letter sent 2 years ago. In sports, the Avs dropped a tough one to the Coyotes 3-2 in overtime last night. They host the Dallas Stars at the Pepsi Center tomorrow night. This report brought to you by the Denver Rescue Mission. The Denver Rescue Mission, serving the poor and needy for over 110 years. Donate your car to the Denver Rescue Mission and support a program that cares for the less fortunate while enjoying great tax benefits. Call Rachel at 303-297-1815. Traffic in your exclusive Weather Channel forecast up next. KNRC News Time, 1241.
Join AM 1150 KNRC as we celebrate the holiday season by giving toys to children in need. Just go to your local Starbucks between now and December 25th and drop off a new unwrapped toy. You'll support the Holiday Angels Toy Drive, benefiting the Starlight Children's Foundation. The toys will be given to children who are being treated in hospitals across Colorado for serious illnesses. So donate a toy today at your local Starbucks store and help brighten the smile of a seriously ill child this holiday season.
KNRC News Time, 1242. Time now to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by AutoZone, and we got a bit of a problem. 10th and Ulster, watch for an injury accident. Traffic lights not working in the Capitol Hill area. Treat those as four-way stops. We got a bit of a medical emergency. I-70 as you make your way onto Park Avenue West. Watch for that particular problem. Get to AutoZone during fall car care season and pick up some Prestone antifreeze, flush and fill your car's cooling system and make it sure it's ready for colder weather. Get in the zone, AutoZone. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Stephanie DeLuca with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. A weather system moving across the mountains will continue to bring moisture, winds, and snow. As a matter of fact, the National Weather Service has issued a winter weather advisory for the mountains above 9,000 feet today. We're going to see, though, mostly sunny skies, high of 58, a little above our average of 51. Tonight, clear in 28. Sunshine tomorrow and 56 and 50s and partly to mostly cloudy for Sunday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Stephanie DeLuca on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's currently partly cloudy and 60 degrees. KNRC News Time is 1243. I'm Chris Gallegos. Our next news at 1 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
1243 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. And we are live from the Denver Press Club. And when we come here to the Denver Press Club, we do it about once a month. And we usually have a theme. And last month's was all about film. And it coincided with the opening of the Denver International Film Festival. And today's broadcast is all about literary matters, literary Colorado, and we have a roster of really fabulous authors. If you're just joining us, you've missed Sybil Downing and John Dunning, but you're not too late for Pete Dexter, who won a National Book Award for Paris Trout. He has a new book out called Train. Stephanie Kane will be joining us, Dan Danbaum, Rick Ashton, who heads the library, Christine Citron, who is the director of Colorado Center for the Book, and a number of other people who will be joining us as we continue the broadcast. With us now is Phil Goodstein, who has written a book called Denver from the Bottom Up, Volume 1, From Sand Creek to Ludlow, and another book of his, The Murders in the Bank Vault, along with Walter Garash, who's an attorney that we have had on, and the attorney who's defending those nuns, remember, the missile silo nuns, and Phil Goodstein. Phil Goodstein, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good afternoon.
Tell me how you came to be a writer. What prompted you in that direction?
Oh, I've been writing forever. A need for expression, a need to counter the everyday lies, cant, blabbery, and nonsense, which is part and parcel of the mass media of America.
Well, welcome to the blabbery and the cant and all of that. You were going to be an academic. You have a doctorate in?
Modern East European history.
Were you thinking about teaching? What happened?
Oh, well, basically, in terms of East European history, if you don't have proper CIA affiliations, they don't want you in academia in the United States for the most part. Plus, the field tended to be, saturated as it was. And if people like John Andrews knew anything about academia, they know there's no liberal conspiracy out there, that usually it's the biggest drudges and apologists for the status quo tend to be on most faculties.
So here you are. You get a PhD in modern Eastern European history. And where did you go to school?
University of Colorado.
So you are a native?
Yes.
And you decide that it's not going to work. It's not going to work for you to be on the faculty. You're too sui generis, probably.
Exactly.
Okay. And at what point does that? At what point in the process does that become fairly clear?
Oh, probably before I got admitted into graduate school.
I mean, you knew that you were going to get a doctorate in something, and it probably wasn't going to work out for you to be on the faculty anywhere.
That was a possibility, but then again, you learn in the course of graduate school what the experience is all about amidst that, and the games, the role-playing, other details like that, plus the general drudgery role that is the primary purpose of colleges.
So there you are. You see that it's not going to work for you to have an academic career. What are you going to do to make a living? How do you solve that question?
Oh, by being a Luftmensch. And a Luftmensch is a classic figure in East European Jewry of somebody who literally lives on air. That's what Luftmensch means amidst all of this. And then I found out that people would pay me for my outrageous opinions and stories and comments, especially on Denver.
And how old were you? I mean, it's not easy, even somebody who's selling fairly well, to make a living as a writer. But at what point were you able to do that?
Well, I've never quite made a living as a writer. I do also a lot of consulting, a lot of private writing, personal house histories for people, as well as tours, other events.
Oh, so you have put together a whole range of activities that allows you to continue to write.
Yes.
Okay. I think that's pretty noble. It's not easy to do. And your new book, Denver from the Bottom Up, it's a history, right?
Yes.
Okay. And tell me about it. Tell me why you decided to do it.
Well, basically, the theme of the book is Denver from its establishment into the early 20th century. Who were the people that actually built Denver? The everyday workers, the role of women, the guys that were out there drugging up the mines amidst all of this, the farmers plowing up the plains, the street sweepers, not the rich, because all the city's history has primarily been of the rich from the top down. I wanted to see how were all of these events impacting the everyday workers of the community.
We've got a little bit of activity going on here. We are joined also by Walter Garash. Is that right?
Yes, he's the
I thought so. Now, when he came in to see us, we didn't know he was coming. So I thought, why is this man, why is he joining us? But here it is. It's a book.
Could be a legal problem.
Could be, and God knows, we need an attorney here. The two of you wrote a book together, Walter Garash and Phil Goodstein, called Murders in the Bank Vault. And so I want to hear about what that's all about. Walter came into the studio one day, but he was incognito. He was dressed in a beret, and it was...
That's incognito?
His everything was sort of hidden, and it was in relationship to the nuns who were the missile silo nuns, because you were representing them, and that's why you came in to talk to us that day. But I didn't know that you had another life. Put your headphones on. There you go. Put those on, Walter. There you are. So here you are, a well-known attorney and a successful one, and I didn't know you had another life here as a writer.
Well, I just came here to hear Phil.
Oh, you did?
That's all.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you were going to come on and be on with him.
No.
Oh, but as long as you're here, tell me a little bit about the book. Is this fiction or nonfiction? The Murders in the Bank Vault.
It's nonfiction.
Talk right into the microphone,
yeah,
Walter.
It's nonfiction. Basically, Phil and I were supposed to get together and do about 20 cases that I thought were socially significant to fit in with the historical aims that Phil had long laid plans for.
Mm-hmm.
And I independently wanted to talk about 20 socially significant cases that I've had that reflected struggle in the community to bettering American democracy and to rout out inequalities on every level. So I gave Phil 20 of my cases, and he did a magnificent job in summarizing them very accurately. Anyhow, time was running out, and we had to get a book. I had to pay him a lot of money if I didn't get a book ready. And I couldn't. I was busy in trial, so I said, Phil, pick one case out and go ahead and write it. We'll do something. And he picked the quadruple homicide case of the United Bank. And
what year did that occur?
Father's Day, June 16th, 1991.
Father's Day, June... please talk really close into the microphone, because I'm having...
Or I can talk very loud so everybody can hear me amidst all of this.
I think we got the message, Phil. So this was... What year was this?
June 16th, 1991. Somebody breaks into the so-called cash register building at around 9:15 in the morning. He lands up murdering four bank guards, makes off with $200,000, and the police immediately suspect an insider, most likely a 25-year retired veteran of the Denver police job, pulled the job, Jim King. Once King is arrested, he calls on an old chess-playing companion of his, Walter Garash, to defend him. Meanwhile, the prosecution deliberately taints the evidence, goes and touches up the drawing of the composite suspect to look just like King, releases fraudulent stories in the press about King having supposedly two brothers who were longtime criminals out of this. Meanwhile, the next thing you know is everybody from Harrison Ford to Elvis makes an appearance in the case, and basically murders in the bank vault is what happens in the case. How the Colorado criminal justice system operates, how a veteran criminal defense attorney treats a high-profile case.
Wow. And I take it that your client, the man who sounds like he's unfairly fingered, you get him off?
He was acquitted.
He was acquitted?
Yeah.
And who actually did the...
Well, we don't know. We feel it's more than one person, but they didn't do a real good follow-up after that.
So that person was never...
Person or person.
Person or person, yeah, are unknown at this point.
Had to be
nobody,
more than one.
Nobody knows who they are.
Well, no.
We have suspicions.
We had some suspicions.
But we don't know for sure.
Right.
So your book, Denver from the Bottom Up, Volume 1, From Santa Creek to Ludlow. You know that Sybil wrote a book on the Ludlow Massacre.
Yes, a novel.
A novel, right, historical fiction. And is Volume 2 in the works still?
Okay, yeah, Volume 2, which should be out about next June, July, is called In the Shadow of the Klan. And that's about how the Ku Klux Klan dominated Denver in the 1920s. But it wasn't just the 1920s. Virtually everything from early 20th century Denver to World War II is impacted by the Klan. And speaking of the Klan, the headquarters of the Klan was right across the street from the Denver Press Club.
Oh, my goodness. So that's a DAC. Is that where they hang out in the steam room?
The DAC had a notorious history of anti-Semitism that helped nurture the Klan in town. But where the wing of the DAC is today was a private hospital run by somebody named Dr. John Galen Locke, who was the Grand Dragon of the Klan. And that's where a lot of the Klan initiations, dirty deals, commitments went on. And in many ways, far more than City Hall, it was Dr. Locke's office which determined what was going on in the city in the course of 1923-1925.
Phil Goodstein, thank you so much for joining us today. Walter Garash, thank you for making a surprise appearance as well.
We're going to have lunch.
Well, okay. And the two of them have written together a book called Murders in the Bank Vault. And Phil Goodstein's Volume 1 is out and Volume 2 is coming out. Denver from the Bottom Up. Fascinating reading both. Thank you so much. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club.
Don't settle for half the talk. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNIC.
Give yourself the RE/MAX advantage. RE/MAX is the home of real estate's top producers, experienced, full-time professionals who specialize in results. Call RE/MAX today. RE/MAX, outstanding agents, outstanding results.
Hi, I'm Judy Schwartz.
And I'm Evelinda Ehrman. We're the Style Matters gals, and we love to shop.
But sometimes we don't like to shop for the same things. For example, I'm sick of looking for thigh-high white boots for you.
Well, that's because you have a short attention span. But there are two boutiques where we both love to shop. Posh and the Perfect Petal at 32nd and Lowell in the Highland neighborhood.
These two boutiques are more than just gift shops. They sell almost anything your little heart desires, such as Anthony shaving and skincare lines for men, stylish hats, the accessory for this season, dishware, and decorative home items.
How about unique floral arrangements, the hottest new skincare line called Juice, and a bridal registry, invitations, and gifts? It's all at the Perfect Petal and Posh.
Two incredible boutiques, Posh and the Perfect Petal, at Lowell and 32nd Avenue in the Highland neighborhood. Open Monday through Saturdays, 9 to 8, Sundays, 11 to 5.
We both love to shop there because they give great shopping.
Here at Airborne Command Headquarters, we get hundreds of letters, some worthy of Chaucer, some not. But one thing they all agree on, they all love Airborne, the wonderful product created by a school teacher who was sick of catching colds in class. Now, what kind of kook writes in to praise a product, you ask? Hey, man, we're talking Airborne, the effervescent health formula that you drop in water and it tastes great. Airborne is a miracle cold remedy, writes Julie Wendt. Finally, a cure for the common cold. says Alec McMurdo. Do these sound like kooks to you? Of course not. So take Airborne. It's really good. Yeah.
Hi, this is Victoria Knight McDowell. I'm a second grade teacher, and I developed the dietary supplement Airborne because I was sick of catching colds in class. When you feel that first cold symptom, won't you please give Airborne a try? Thank you.
Find Airborne Natural Cold Remedy at Walgreens, Rite Aid, CVS, Longs, Brooks, Duane Reade, and Trader Joe's. Ask for Airborne, baby.
If the phrase save big time makes your ears perk up like a Doberman pincher, then I'm here to throw you a bone, Rex. See, at Hotels.com, you'll find great deals on thousands of hotels worldwide. At Hotels.com, you get the absolute best deal. Yes, I did say absolute best deal. No, you don't need to get your ears checked, but they do look kind of silly standing at attention like that. Call 1-800-3-HOTELS or click Hotels.com. Best prices, best places, guaranteed.
Based on price matching guarantees, see website for details.
Lionel, would you join me every weeknight from 9 to midnight here on AM 1150 KNRC? Now back to Enid Goldstein.
It's almost 12:59, but guess what? We have two more hours with each other right here on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. We're coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. Next week, we're going to have more authors. We'll have Will Haygood on, who's done the biographies, a Washington Post writer, reporter, and done the biography of Sammy Davis Jr., a man who lived his life one way and performed publicly another way, and also Rita Mae Brown. But we have Pete Dexter coming up on today's program, Stephanie Kane, lots and lots of wonderful authors, Dan Danbaum, Rick Ashton from the Denver Public Library, John Ensland from the president of the Denver Press Club, and who's also a reporter. He'll be joining us, too. Christine Citron, director, Colorado Center for the Book. Today, the theme of today's broadcast is Literary Colorado, how to write a mystery, how to take your pen and paper and turn yourself into a multimillionaire. We'll explore that question. I'm Enid Goldstein, and this is AM 1150 KNRC.
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 1 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Partly cloudy and 59 degrees. I'm Chris Gallegos. This report brought to you by AutoZone. A former Denver radio personality faces 8 years behind bars after pleading guilty to receiving child pornography. This today from U.S. Attorney John Suthers. 50-year-old Dean Litska, known on the air as Sam Hammer, was arrested on February 28th of this year after a package he was expecting containing child pornography was delivered to his home. Sentencing is scheduled for January 21st before District Judge Robert Blackburn. Over the last week, Children's Hospital in Denver has received up to 100 kids a day with flu-like symptoms. Plenty of kids have missed school in Larimer and Mould County as well. Dr. Ken Gershman with the State Health Department says the flu has hit the metro area relatively early this year, and it's hard to say exactly how bad it could be.
It's also hard to say, since we're in the middle of it, if this will end up being a worse season than, say, last year or the last few years. It very well could, but it's pretty hard to tell when the whole story, the whole picture hasn't been painted yet.
Gershman says if you get immunized in the next few days, remember it takes a few days to get into your system. This means if you're exposed to the flu before the vaccine has taken hold, you won't be protected. An early morning car chase lands a 25-year-old woman behind bars and a Denver police officer in the hospital. Denver Police Detective Teresa Garcia says about 9 a.m. this morning, officers stopped a woman driving a stolen Dodge Neon at Dartmouth and Federal. The driver fled, hitting a Denver police officer along the way.
Vehicle runs over his foot. The suspect vehicle takes off northbound on Federal. A third officer sees the vehicle and chases the vehicle a short distance.
The chase ended when the suspect ran into a Ford Expedition at Zuni. The driver of the Expedition was not hurt, but his 35-year-old passenger, Dennis Gonzalez, was taken to Denver Health and is currently listed in critical condition. Show me the money. Now, that from State Treasurer Mike Hoffman on Colorado Sheriff tobacco settlement money. Kaufman meets today with the legislature's Joint Budget Committee to pitch the concept of selling future tobacco payments. That means a total between $800 and $900 million. Anti-smoking advocates, however, want the money earmarked for tobacco prevention programs. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., the White House is chastising Senate Democrats for blocking President Bush's judicial nominations to the federal bench. Bush spokesman Scott McClellan read a statement from the president early this morning.
These obstructionist tactics are shameful, unfair,
and have become all too common. At a time when the American people have important issues backlogged in the courts, partisan senators are playing politics with the judicial process.
The president's statement also thanked the GOP-led Senate for the nearly 40-hour talkathon that failed to break a filibuster by Democrats. McClellan added that no matter who is president or who controls the Senate, the American people, quote, deserve a commitment by all senators to live up to their constitutional responsibilities. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche take on the Coyotes in Phoenix last night. They lose 3-2 in overtime. The Nuggets are back in action tonight, hosting Orlando at the Pepsi Center. And Jake Plummer is back behind center for the Broncos. They take on the Doug Flutie-led Chargers Sunday at Invesco. Plummer says he hopes his presence can help turn the Broncos season around.
We know what our back's against, know what we have to accomplish. You know, if I can add a spark, I hope I can get out there, and we know what we have to get done as a team. It's not just going to be me going out there and winning seven straight. It's going to be the team getting out there, winning this first one against San Diego, and we go from there.
This report brought to you by AutoZone. 3 days special at AutoZone this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday only. Get a Fram oil filter free with any 5-quart motor oil purchase. Limit one free. Hurry. This weekend only at AutoZone. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast up next. KNRC News Time is 104.
Needless to say, I was anxious to be 110 miles offshore and jumping off a boat in the open ocean.
Jim Ray is a marine biologist who has been working with a national marine sanctuary called the Flower Gardens, deep in the Gulf of Mexico.
The Flower Garden banks are a very unique set of reefs. About 55% of the surface area is covered with living coral.
And while his work is not surprising, what might be is who he works for. Shell.
Just gives me a very different view and approach on the environment. Yeah, it has become an old friend.
Protecting this magnificent area is something people like Jim have been doing for over 30 years.
With this kind of protection, it'll probably be there 100 years from now for people to still enjoy.
And while Shell will continue to focus on energy, that will never be its only focus.
As long as I'm still allowed to dive, I'm not too old to climb back on a boat, I'll probably have the opportunity to go back to places like the Flower Gardens.
To find out more, see the Shell report at www.shell.com.
KNRC News Time is 1:05. Time now to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center. Here you go, Darren.
Thank you very much, Chris. This traffic report is brought to you by the Home Depot At Home Services. Got a bit of a problem eastbound Boulder Turnpike right at Broadway. Watch for that. Medical emergency in the mousetrap where I-70 and I-25 meet Park Avenue West. And watch for a bit of a problem. It's going to be right in the Capitol Hill area. Flashing lights treat any intersections at the four-way stop. Get up to $1,000 rebate by mail on qualified Train heating and cooling systems. Call the Home Depot At Home Services at 1-800-79-DEPOT. License number available upon request. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Mike Stenifert with the KNRC forecast and weather channel. Plenty of sunshine, breezy at times this afternoon. Fairly mild as we get up to a high near 60. Tonight, fair skies. Winds die down after sunset, low 28. A bad day on Saturday. Sunshine with a high in the mid to upper 50s. Cloud cover on Sunday and a bit cooler with a high in the low 50s. For the Weather Channel, I'm Mike Stenifert on AM 1150 KNRC.
Partly cloudy, 59 degrees. KNRC News Time is 106. I'm Chris Gallegos. Our next news at 1:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now, the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
Six minutes after 1 o'clock. Welcome to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. We do this once a month. There's always a theme. The theme this month is Literary Denver, and this is a little bit outside the theme of Denver, but certainly within very heavily within the theme of literary. My next guest, Pete Dexter. Stephanie King will be joining us a little bit later in the hour, and she writes legal mysteries. But Pete Dexter almost needs no introduction. His book, Paris Trout, won the National Book Award, probably the most prestigious literary award that there is. And the new book is called Train. Pete Dexter, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. Am I on?
Yep, you are on. And you know what? Talk right into the microphone.
Oh, all right.
Oh, there you go. Now I can really hear
you. Thank you for having me, Enid.
Well, I had a show, as I said to you, I had a show in Sacramento. And I know you lived in Sacramento and you worked for the Sacramento Bee. Was it the Bee?
Yes.
And you were a columnist. And you are a legend in that town. So I heard a lot about you long before I discovered you as a writer.
Yeah, I don't really understand. I hear that about Philadelphia, and I do kind of understand that because there were some things that happened there that were fairly on a legendary scale of screwing up. But I can't remember much about Sacramento that hit me as legendary, except legendarily bored.
I want to talk to you about your life and how you came to write, but I remember interviewing Elmore Leonard once. And it was long after your book came out, and I said, "What are you reading?" And he said, "Paris Trout."
Yeah.
Do you know him?
No, I sure like him though. He's I love that story of a guy. He must have written 25 novels before something worked for him, and then when it worked, it really worked for quite a while. And you know, he's a good writer, and had it coming, and all it paid off. I mean, a nice guy, and
he was in the advertising business. I think he was like a copywriter.
Is
my recollection of his background. And you know, the great quote about Elmore Leonard is he leaves out the dialogue that nobody reads.
Yeah,
it's so spare. He says, "I leave out what people don't read." To have that, it's a certain gift. All right. So here you are. Where did you grow up, Pete Dexter?
I was born in Pontiac, Michigan, and my dad died when I was 2.
I'm from Benton Harbor.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. And your dad died when you were two.
And we moved to back to the family home in South Dakota, and then my mother remarried and moved to Georgia and Illinois. So I grew up a lot of places.
So how did you get into the newspaper business?
I was just walking past the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel. I had a job. I was actually digging stuff, ditches. And I remember just walking past that building and, you know, just beat up and tired and sweaty and smelling bad. And I looked in there and it was air conditioned, and the place was just like a sea of, I mean, it was when white boots were in fashion.
Mm-hmm. And is that the 60s?
Yeah, late 60s, maybe 69.
Mm-hmm. And talk right into
there,
that microphone.
And the place was full of white boots and girls in those real short skirts, and it was air conditioned, and I just saw my career right there before me. I just saw it open the door.
So you walk in, you're smelly, you're tired, and how do you get a job?
Well, I just fill out an application.
To do what? Reporter?
Yeah.
Or anything?
No, I think it was a reporter's application, as I remember.
Did you graduate from high school?
High school?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And college, too?
I hadn't at that point, but I did eventually.
Eventually. And did you get the job?
Yeah. Just hired me and...
Why'd they hire you? You had no experience.
It was a different business and a different world. I mean, you could never do that now. But, you know, then they walk in and they'd take a chance on you. If it didn't work out, they'd find somebody else.
And what were you assigned to do? What became your beat eventually?
I was, not eventually, I was like, I walked in there and 2 days later I was a tomato editor. I was covering agriculture.
I thought maybe it was a tomato in white boots.
No. They wouldn't let me do that. But, yeah, I mean, they expected me to cover tomatoes and agriculture and the hospital district and juvenile crime and all the poverty programs and health. There was a guy there named Dr. Hughes who was the head of the health department. And like every Monday I'd come in and I'd call him up and I'd say, you know, do we have an epidemic? And he would find something that had 3 cases, and he'd say, well, technically we call an epidemic. And so we run a big headline, you know, measles epidemic hits South Florida. And the poor bastard that was covering it for the Fort Lauderdale News, I mean, he'd been there forever, and his boss was just all over him because how come, you know, we're getting quote, scooped on these medical disasters, you know, these epidemics, and you know, the guy couldn't figure it out. And so, yeah, that was about the last good thing I did as a, the last time I made an editor happy as a reporter.
So you go from the Florida paper to where next?
I got a small grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, and I went back to South Dakota and lived, spent a winter back there writing poetry.
So you knew that you wanted to write somewhere, somewhere inside of you?
No, I wouldn't say that. It was just something I could do. I hadn't read much at that point. And I kind of knew I wanted to play around with it, but if you'd asked me if I was going to end up doing that, I had no sense of that at all.
So you're in South Dakota, and then at some point you got to get a job.
Ran out of money, went back to, got a job in West Palm Beach at the Post as a reporter.
Uh-huh.
And then the guy quit there, the editor quit there because the Cox newspapers made him endorse Nixon over McGovern. And so he had it, and which is the stupidest reason to quit a paper. I mean, he had really a good situation there. I could pick between those two guys, right? And so he quit, and, you know, I quit because he quit. And Ken Schreier quit, who's a managing editor here in Denver. And, and so we all quit and went to Daytona Beach, and that lasted another 6 weeks or something. And then I went to work in a gas station. And
were you writing all the way through?
No.
So when the job ended, that was it. At what point did you start writing novels?
I guess I was maybe 38 years old. I was in the hospital, and I had a real bad concussion. It changed the way things tasted, and I quit drinking. And all of a sudden, I got an extra, 30 hours a week. Yes. What am I going to do?
My guest, Pete Dexter, are you going to be at Tatter Cover tonight?
Yes.
Which one, Cherry Creek or Lodo? Joe?
No idea.
Which Tatter Cover is he going to be at? Do you know? You need to ask Lisa. So do you know, John, which Tatter Cover he's going to be at, Lodo or Cherry Creek? We'll find out. We'll tell people where they can meet you tonight and go to the signing.
I mean, I did know that. Is one of them on First Avenue or
yes,
First Street?
Yes, First. Then that's Cherry Creek?
I believe that's it.
All right, so then you're probably going to be at 7:30 at Cherry Creek. They usually start at 7:30.
Is that the one that has a restaurant in the same
yes,
building?
Yes, on the top floor.
That's
all right, so
where
he's
we definitely
be
are.
7:30, Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek. Okay, so you quit drinking because you got a concussion and...
Well, it just started tasting bad. It changed the way things tasted. And on the other hand, fish suddenly tasted good. I never really liked fish until then. And that lasted quite a while. That lasted, and it was only 2 or 3 years ago that I happened to sip some alcohol, and it didn't taste bad anymore. I mean, it didn't taste great, but it tasted okay, and so I could go back.
Did you go back as deeply as you were before?
Oh, I was. I actually wasn't exaggerating. Yeah. No, I don't drink much, but when I do, I...
So when you quit drinking, you started writing?
Yeah, pretty much.
Had you been covering crime, how would you describe your books? What would you...
I wouldn't try. They're just
what
so...
genre does your publisher put them into?
They don't know how to do it either. It's very difficult. You can't... I mean, the publicists sometimes call it, everybody keeps saying it's dark fiction, which I don't even, they say that a lot in Hollywood, where that's the two things they know about is dark and money.
Uh-huh.
But they don't really know too much about either one of those things either. We could go into that a little bit.
Yeah,
I could tell you Hollywood stories, but
I want to hear some Hollywood stories. But so you have written, how many books did you write before Paris Trout really?
Paris Trout
put you on a kind of literary landscape that very few people inhabit.
Well, Paris Trout was the third book.
Okay.
And I think that the second book, Deadwood, well, probably not, is well written. Is, you know, is probably every bit as good.
So, you write, you've written now three books, and then and the third one is Paris Trout. Yeah. You've actually written more since then, but I'm just sort of a chronology here. And it wins the National Book Award. Your life must have changed in some serious ways.
Well, it changes you. Changes the picture a little bit financially, and it. You can't
were
go
you,
around.
Were you trying to newspaper and, you know, be a reporter and write at the same time, and then this allows you simply to write from here on out?
Well, no. I could have, but I didn't. I was a newspaper columnist, which is a different deal.
Right.
I mean, that's.
Opinion.
If you can't write three columns in 10 hours, I mean, so newspapers were. I'm not one of those guys that has to go spend 40 or 50 hours a week at a job like a lot of people. So I have that advantage where I can work a little bit in the morning and go in the paper in the afternoon for a little while, and I'm essentially still only semi-employed, and so. You know, that's what allowed. What did you ask me?
It allowed you to spend most of your time writing, if you wanted to. But it sounds like you like the what happens in the newsroom. The vibrancy of what occurs in the newsroom. That it's a nice change. But you're not doing that now. You're not writing for any newspaper right now.
I left Philadelphia, and once that happened, really, the newspaper business, it's not what it was at all. And Philadelphia was probably the last place it was really great, and I was at the last great paper to work. I mean,
The Inquirer?
No, the Daily News. It was where, I mean, stuff was tolerated there that nobody would put up with now.
And give us an example of what used to be tolerated that nobody would put up with.
Yeah, not going back to drinking or anything, but, I mean, in the old days, you'd walk into a newsroom and there would be at least two drunks. I mean, people you could count on, right? And now, and they'd be saying stuff, or, you know, I've seen fistfights at the Daily News. And it was one of these deals where the editor was just wide open. I mean, as long as you were writing well, he didn't care what you did and what you looked like or how you came in when you. It was kind of a madhouse, and people in the Inquirer knew it. I mean, that I didn't realize. I thought they were a bunch of stuffed shirts, but the Inquirer was really a pretty liberal paper too, as far as letting people do what they wanted to do. And, you know, we were just completely out of control. And then, you know, the financial world started tightening the screws, I guess, after I left the paper. And
what made you leave? Were you invited out, or were you?
No. I had some offers from the West Coast, and I had one from L.A. and one from San Jose, and I guess I was talking San Francisco. And it seemed to me time to... I don't know, it just sort of seemed like it was time to move, and so I called an old friend in Sacramento and asked him where he thought the fit would be best, and he talked me into coming.
To the Sacramento Bee?
Yeah, to my... Well...
Do you regret that?
Well, not exactly, because it forced me out of the business, and, you know, it was time to do other things.
I want to talk to you about your writing. My guest, Pete Dexter, winner of the National Book Award for Paris Trout, his brand-new book, Train, and you can meet him tonight at Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek, at 7:30. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club on AM 1150 KNRC.
Denver's only independent news and talk radio station, AM 1150 KNRC.
Puppetry of the Penis, the international hit comedy that everyone is talking about.
It was hysterical. I haven't laughed that hard in a really long time.
Inspiring.
Funny. Very good. Nothing I haven't seen before, but very good. It was hysterical. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. Entertaining. It was great to bring my husband, one of the few men here, tonight. It was great.
I look painful.
These two naked Aussies achieve a lunatic virtuosity, sending audiences into hysterics in New York and London. Now Denver audiences are roaring with laughter. The Penis extends to the new Denver City Theater,
721 Santa Fe Drive.
A once-in-a-lifetime experience. It's hard to resist the good-natured silliness raves variety. Don't miss this hilarious phenomenon. The Philadelphia Inquirer raves it's good, clean fun.
Hurry and get your tickets to Puppetry of the Penis. The last performance in Denver is November 23rd. So act fast.
So you can imagine a guy sitting next to you just crossing his legs going, no, no, no.
Puppetry of the Penis.
Reserve seats on sale now at Tickets West Outlets, TicketsWest.com, and the Denver Civic Theater box office. It's like nothing you've ever seen.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. It's common knowledge that household dust carries germs, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, pesticide, things you don't want your family breathing in. And when you realize that dust can be suspended in the air 8 hours before it settles, then you want a vacuum that traps the dust in the bag. You want a vacuum that cleans the air in your home as it cleans your floors. You want a hypoallergenic 8-pound Oreck XL. A hypoallergenic Oreck features a 7-stage filtration system that traps over 99.99% of particles 250 times smaller than the width of a human hair. When you turn on a hypoallergenic Oreck XL, there's never a cloud of dust in your face or a foul odor. Call 1-800-989-4200 for free literature or a free 30-day home trial. That's 1-800-989-4200. It's a vacuum designed with your well-being in mind.
You know, the thing about winning awards is that you have to say award-winning this and award-winning that. And frankly, it's very tiring for a voice talent like myself.
Here's your mic high, sir.
Thanks. But just in case you didn't know, you can download clips of award-winning news features and guest interviews from our award-winning website, made by an award-winning designer featuring award-winning hosts. Well, it's true. KNRCRadio.com has it all. But if somebody at the station wins a Nobel Prize, I'm out of here. And now, the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
124 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. The theme of this month's Denver Press Club broadcast is Literary Colorado. This exceeds Colorado. My guest, Pete Dexter, who won a National Book Award for Paris Trout. You can meet him tonight at Tattered Cover, his brand new book called Train. And you know, Pete, I sometimes review books, or used to. I don't have much time for it now. It's time consuming, and I'm not so sure so rewarding. We hope for the reader, but not so much for the reviewer.
Yeah,
and it pays abysmally.
Thank you.
I opened the first page of this book. Maybe could you read the first paragraph or so? I thought it was such a hot open. I thought I've got to read this book. I've got to. This is a terrific open, I thought. So if you would grace us.
Sure.
And right into the microphone too.
At this point in his story, Packard had never fallen in love and didn't trust what he'd heard of the lingo. Forever, my darling, with all my heart, till the end of time, more than life itself, with every fiber of my being, oh, my darling, Clementine, etc. It sounded out of control to him and messy. He'd spent maybe 1,000 days in church, although... He'd spent maybe 1,000 days in Sundays in church, though. Make that 400, and then 2 edgy years on a battleship in the Pacific Ocean, and then 5 very edgy days in the Pacific Ocean without the battleship. And before any of that, he deliberately and often put himself in places where he saw awful things happen, not only to people who deserved it, but also to people who just seemed to be stumbled in at the wrong time, walking into the picture as the shutter clipped through no fault of their own. Which is to say that by now Packard recognized praying when he heard it, and knew the kind of deals people would offer up, the promises they would make when they were in over their heads. And that, from what he'd heard, was what it, love, was all about.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is really a terrific beginning to a story I can't wait to find out more about. Talk to me about... how your life changed when you won the National Book Award. You're now able to write. You're not doing newspapering. You're Hollywood comes calling.
Yeah, well, I
talk to me about, yeah.
I didn't quit newspapering because I won a National Book Award. I mean, that happened.
You quit because the business changed is the way I took.
Yeah,
what
I
you
just
had
wasn't having any fun doing it anymore, and I, the editor of the paper and I grew increasingly disappointed with each other, and it was, and it just seemed like, you know, time to cut the cord, but it wasn't now I'm famous, so I don't have to work for a newspaper anymore.
Right.
I wouldn't, I mean, it changed things in that it, you know, it'd make things easier financially, and it, you know, it puts you in kind of a different rung where it gives you access to a lot of things that other writers were just as good but didn't win the National Book.
Such as? What kind of access? Besides the publicity. Hollywood comes knocking on your door, I would
think. Yeah, all that stuff.
All right, so what happens when Hollywood comes knocking? Have they made films of any of your books yet?
Yeah, they made Paris Trout. They made, they bought Deadwood and used one scene out of it. God, I can't remember. All the books have been, you know, optioned one way or another, but nothing's been made except those two. And Deadwood really doesn't count because it wasn't made. I mean, it became this guy, Walter Hill, the director, fell in love with a stage play that he'd seen. And the name of the movie is Wild Bill, you know, based on Deadwood, but it wasn't. It was based on a stage play.
Do you do any of the screenwriting, or no? They leave that to the screenwriter.
Yeah.
You do the screenplay as well?
I do screenplays, yeah. I did, I mean, the Deadwood screenplay was pretty good screenplay, which is why, but that taught me a real lesson about not, you know, counting on,
on Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, you don't, if you go into Hollywood looking for fulfillment as an artist or a person or whatever kind of fulfillment you're looking for, the only kind of fulfillment, I mean, you're out of luck. The only kind of, it's funny, and sometimes you have a, you know, you meet people that are smart occasionally, and it's enjoyable that way. And, you know, financially, it's obscene, and it's just something else to do.
Tell me about your process in writing. How do you do it every day? You get up and write, or you just do it when you have the, when you're really working on something and you've got a project going?
No,
are you an everyday guy?
You got to do it every day. It's like work. It is work. I don't get up and write. I start about midnight usually and go till 2:30 or something until it gets stale, and then I go to bed and sleep till noon. And
when you get up at noon, what's your day like?
Oh, I play with the dogs, and I mean the only thing I feel like I have to do is, like, I have to put an hour and a half in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, I play with the dogs or my wife, and we'll go to a movie, or we'll go out to dinner, or we're just, you know, I'll go play golf and just.
And you don't really go to work till about midnight.
Right.
And it sounds like you have a real fluidity where you can go into and out of your work. When you were doing newspapering, doing columns for papers, you could go into and out of your work, whatever, wherever it took you, and then come out of it, do your column, and then come back into it. So you could easy in, easy out.
Yeah, I mean, I have, the whole time Train was being written, there was another novel also being written. So it's not, yeah, I can put myself into that thing and then get myself out of it. I mean, it's I'm not making myself clear, am I?
No, I understand. I understand what you're saying. In this, winning the National Book Award or having any kind of literary success, real literary success, is like winning the lotto. You probably even have a better chance of winning the lotto than you do of winning the National Book Award. How, if I were to ask you the surprises that have come out of all of this, what would you say to me?
Well, the surprise really is that, I mean, I'll get up, when I get up and go over to the little, you know, I write in a little cabin deal, and I'll go over there and look at what I did the night before. And if it's good, it's almost like And, you know, I feel almost like an idiot savant. And then often I just feel like an idiot. But it's almost like, it's not quite, but it's almost like I didn't do it. It's almost like it just happened. And then,
I believe that.
And then, and it is a surprise.
I believe
especially
that.
Especially if it's good.
Pete Dexter is my guest, if you're just joining us. His new book is Train. You know, I write, not nearly as often as I should and hardly at all at the moment. But there have been times in my life when I'm just taking it down and all I am is a stenographer and I don't know where it's coming from and it's far better than anything I could have ever concocted. So if you have that open door policy somewhere along the line and it's drifting in, not to minimize what you bring to it, I mean, there's something really magical about the process.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of a filter, but in the filter being where the craft of it comes in. But, you know, if you put yourself in the head of a... If you legitimately put yourself in the head of a character and see things through that character's eyes, and, you know, if you can do that with, you know, however many characters you want to use that way and let them go the way they want to go. Don't try to steer it at the end
when
of
you're,
the day.
That, well, that's what I was going to ask you. When you start out writing a book, do you have an idea where it's going to go? Do you know? Is it some prompting that you have, some inner prompting that causes you to start to tackle that story as opposed to the other colliding voices in your head?
No, I just sort of follow it. I just I try to let it go naturally where it's going.
When you sit down to write a book, do you have any idea where it's going to go, or you just start noodling? You have some character speaking to you, or a first line that comes to you, or something that happens, and then it just goes from there.
I usually have a place in mind and a...
Talk right into the microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry. I usually have a place in mind and a character, but that's all. And I don't really have the character defined. Just, you know, it's almost like... I'll tell you, I don't know if you remember, you know, the way Steinbeck described people a lot. He would, he would kind of do like a still study, whatever you call that, you know.
Still life.
A still life, yeah. And then he would watch this person, and then something would move, like a hand or something. The guy would be a farmer, he'd have big hands. And that's, right. You'd see the hands, and then you'd see him move. And that's the way he got into a lot. Well, I don't, you know, do... I'm not talking about a literary trick now, but that is sort of the way, you know, this fiction comes to me. I look at these people and then I let something move, and whatever moves, that's where you go.
Who do you read? Who do you like? What authors do you like?
I think Richard Russo is a really warm, generous writer. Paget Powell's probably the best writer in America that nobody's ever heard of. I mean, Paget's got a... I mean, he's, as I was saying, he just, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, he published a book called Aliens of Affection, which was one long story and some shorter ones. And if Nabokov had written that book, he'd been having a good day. I mean, Paget's just is a million... tricks. And I mean, and it's the story also has, I mean, he's very heartfelt kind of stuff, but he's just all over the place with literary stuff. And there's a kid named Brady Udall who I see becoming a real good novelist. He wrote something called A Miracle Life of Edgar Mint, and I don't think he's very well known yet, but...
So we should keep our eye on Brady Udall. We ought to pay special attention to Paget Powell. And Richard Russo is getting attention.
Yeah,
Richard
doesn't need me anymore to tell anybody who he is. He's, yeah, they know who he is. They're wondering who the hell I am.
Pete Dexter, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been my great pleasure. The new book is called Train. If you haven't had a chance, read Paris Trout. It's what won a National Book Award. I can't wait to read Train. And you should be able to meet Pete Dexter tonight at Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek, 7:30. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club and KNRC. 1:36, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
It's the 27th annual L'Esprit de Noël Holiday Home Tour and Boutique. Tour five beautiful homes in Denver's Country Club Historic District, all decorated for the holidays by some of Denver's finest designers and florists. The tour runs Thursday through Saturday, November 20th through 22nd. Parking is available at Calvary Temple, 200 South University Boulevard, with buses to the tour homes. Tickets at King Supers for $13 or at the door for $15. Presented by the Central City Opera House Association Guild.
Winter is just around the corner, and sometimes it's difficult to make ends meet. If either you or your aging relatives are having trouble, you may be able to help them find benefits. AARP and the National Council on the Aging are helping people complete a benefits checkup to find programs that save money on groceries, medical care, energy bills, and more. Call 303-318-6764 to learn more. 303-318-6764. AARP, the power to make it better.
Good afternoon, partly cloudy and 59 degrees. I am Chris Gallegos. This report is service of Kohl's. We start with some breaking news this afternoon. Cherry Creek Schools is confirming that Eagle Crest High School in Aurora has been locked down due to what they're calling an unsafe situation in the community. Neighboring Thunder Ridge Middle School is not locked down, however. We'll have more details as we get them. Also, the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office is looking for a missing 13-year-old boy. Maximilian Plum was last seen at 6 this morning as he rode his mountain bike to Ken Carroll Middle School. He's described as 5 feet 2, 195 pounds. He was wearing a black T-shirt, dark blue jeans, and a BC skater shoes and a black helmet. The bike is described as a KHS dark blue or purple mountain style bike. An autopsy on a 7-month-old baby boy from Greeley shows he died of shaken impact syndrome. The boy fell into a coma in September and died October 9th. Autopsy results show the baby suffered non-accidental head trauma, and investigators have ruled his death a homicide. The boy's babysitter, 18-year-old Samuel Renner, faces charges of reckless child abuse, resulting in death. He told police the infant was knocked unconscious when he fell off his bed at home. In sports, the Avs lose in overtime to the Coyotes 3-2 in overtime last night. They're back on the ice hosting the Dallas Stars at the Pepsi Center tomorrow night. The Nuggets host Orlando tonight at the Pepsi Center, and the Broncos hope to get back on the winning track. They take on the Doug Flutie-led Chargers this Sunday at Invesco. Kohl's holiday sale starts Friday at 8 a.m. Get great savings for the holidays. Save an extra 15% on everything each time you use your Kohl's charge through Monday. See store details. Kohl's, give happy, get happy. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast up next. KNRC News Time, 1:39.
Join AM 1150 KNRC as we celebrate the holiday season by giving toys to children in need. Just go to your local Starbucks between now and December 25th and drop off a new unwrapped toy. You'll support the Holiday Angels Toy Drive, benefiting the Starlight Children's Foundation. The toys will be given to children who are being treated in hospitals across Colorado for serious illnesses. So donate a toy today at your local Starbucks store and help brighten the smile of a seriously ill child this holiday season.
KNRC News Time 1:40. Time now to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by XL Energy, and we got a couple problems. 6th Avenue at Federal, watch for a bit of a problem. They got an overly loaded semi there that's causing some problems. Also caught a problem, Colfax in Colorado. Saving energy saves you money, and a little knowledge goes a long way. Call XL Energy at 1-800-895-4999 to order your 60 Ways to Save brochure. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC Traffic.
I'm Mike Stenifert with the KNRC forecast and the Weather Channel. Plenty of sunshine, breezy at times this afternoon. Fairly mild as we get up to a high near 60. Tonight, fair skies. Winds die down after sunset, low 28. A bad day on Saturday. Sunshine with a high in the mid to upper 50s. Cloud cover on Sunday and a bit cooler with a high in the low 50s. For the Weather Channel, I'm Mike Stenifert on AM 1150 KNRC.
It is an absolutely beautiful day out there, 60 degrees, KNRC News Time 1:40. I'm Chris Gallegos. Our next news at 2 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Do you know the difference between customizing an opening to fit a door and customizing a door to fit an opening? Call Colorado Door Connection at 303-425-3366. They'll explain.
From structural integrity to financial sense, this is a question you cannot afford to overlook when considering the doors in your home. Since a door is the first impression made to your home or room, and you know the saying, you only get one chance to make a first impression, Colorado Door Connection will help you make the best impression possible through excellent service and quality products. Call now and receive a free handle set valued at $160 with a purchase of $600 or more. Colorado Door Connection. Visit our showroom at 9710 West 50th Avenue, just off I-70 in Kipling, or call 303-425-3366. Don't put your home's doors on the back burner any longer. The holidays and holiday guests are fast approaching, so visit Colorado Door Connection today.
KNRC Market Watch.
Sellers have taken over on Wall Street. Markets are trading at new lows for the day. Dow Industrial Average is down 85 points inside the final hour of trading. NASDAQ is now off 32 points. The S&P 500 losing 8. News that Charles Schwab has discovered instances of improper mutual fund trading under its own roof is beginning to weigh on the stock. It is now down over a dollar or 8%. Schwab's got some company today. American Express and BlackRock, both receiving requests for information by stock regulators investigating the fund scandal. Amex stock is now down over a half dollar, BlackRock losing $1.20. But one company trading above it all today is called Clean Harbors. The firm, which specializes in handling hazardous waste, turned a profit during the last quarter and is now forecasting continued earnings growth this quarter. Clean Harbors, the biggest gainer at the NASDAQ. It is now up 50%. Again, on Wall Street, though, Dow off 86 points. I'm Joe Matthew from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150.
KNRC. 143 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. The theme of this month's Press Club show is Literary Colorado, and joining us is Stephanie Kane, whose new book is called Extreme Indifference. It's subtitled A Crime Novel. And Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
I want to hear how you became a crime novelist, because if I look at you, I would say I'm not cherchant de la femme. <You know? laughs>
Well, I started out as a lawyer. In fact, I was a corporate lawyer for about a dozen years for Denver's largest law firm, and I became a partner there in the corporate department. I was a banking regulatory lawyer, of all things. And then I just kind of had an epiphany and jumped the fence to criminal defense work at sort of a late stage in my career, and I had the time of my life.
Well, there was something in between there. You decided at not exactly 21 that you thought you might want to go to medical school, which didn't quite work out.
I was trying to gloss over that.
Why medical school? Well, you know what? That's going to show up in one of your novels, and you'll make a ton of money, and you'll say, I'm so glad I didn't go to medical school, because those insurance clerks who are 19 years old are deciding everything now.
Right. Well, there's a lot of reasons to be glad I didn't get into medical school. But what happened was I met some people, some men who had AIDS. And they made me realize that I was just hiding out in that big corporate law firm, and that I was more—they were more alive than I was. And that's actually what inspired me to try to get into medical school. So at age 40, I went back to college to take the courses that I'd gone to law school in order to avoid the first time around. Mm-hmm. And I applied, and my partners all predicted failure, that I would fall flat on my face. In exchange for giving up a secure, tenured position, I would make a fool of myself, and that's exactly what happened, because no medical school wanted me. I mean, I was on the waiting list of a couple, but...
Was it to do with your age? I would think it would be to do with your age rather than...
I think, frankly, that they didn't believe that I wanted to treat patients. I think they felt that I wanted to get a leg up on suing doctors.
Oh.
There's a sort of a natural antipathy between doctors and lawyers, mm-hmm. which I had totally underestimated. But anyway, it all worked out wonderfully because...
So now you're not going to go to medical school, and you've decided I've had enough of banking law. Now what do you do?
Well, I was beating the pavement looking for a job, and a criminal defense lawyer was the only one who would hire me. And he told me I would be worthless to him unless I could function in a courtroom. So he sort of flung me in head first.
Had you done much litigation?
No, never. Never.
Never.
And I had the time of my life. And I think really it's because having humiliated myself so spectacularly, I had nothing left to lose. It was the most liberating experience of my life.
And so now you're doing criminal defense law, and you're finding that you're actually having fun with this. And at what point do you decide that you're going to become a novelist?
Well, I was embarking on a very slow downward spiral with my law practice. And I found out just how easy it is to kill a law practice. The other problem with criminal law is that unless you collect your fee in advance, you're unlikely to see a penny of it. So the long of
if your client goes to the pokey,
well, even,
or even
even,
if your client doesn't go to the pokey, you're not going to see
that's
any.
That's right.
Because he's gotten the verdict he wanted, and that's it.
That's
adios.
Right.
Hasta la vista, baby.
So I was just making less and less money, and in 1995 I bought my first computer, and partly to teach myself how to use it, I wrote a manuscript, and that's how I started. And then
that is a fairly unique way of learning how to use a computer, is simply to write a manuscript. Other people might take a slightly less complicated approach.
I've never done anything halfway in my life.
So you write this manuscript, and then do you send it off? Well, you already have a manuscript. You might as well.
Well, I wrote it as a cathartic experience, and I never really intended to try to get it published, but then people start saying, oh, it's such a good story, it's such a good story. And as an aspiring novelist, your ambition starts to kick in and you think, well, maybe I can publish it. And you have no idea what lies ahead, which is, really that you're at the bottom of a very, very steep climb. And then I started to learn about the craft, and I just kept writing and rewriting, and I worked on other manuscripts. And eventually I got something that was publishable. But the ambition just sort of bit me, and it kind of took over. I never intended to be a writer.
So the first two novels are, what would you call them? Would you call them crime novels? Well, are they legal thrillers? How do you define what you do?
The first one is called Blind Spot, and it was published by Bantam in 2000. And that is the predecessor to Extreme Indifference, which just came out from Scribner this week. And those are both legal thrillers. The heroine is a criminal defense lawyer who is a closet dyslexic. She's a better lawyer because she can't read. And that's basically how I exorcised my corporate demons, by writing about this dyslexic lawyer.
What's the name of your dyslexic lawyer?
Her name is Jackie Flowers.
Jackie Flowers. And where is the series based?
The series is based in Denver.
In Denver.
And basically in the criminal law office that I practiced in.
Are you still doing criminal defense work?
No. I've gone inactive, which means my license is intact, but to actually activate it, I just have to take some continuing legal education courses. I don't have to take the bar again. But I haven't represented clients in a while, since I've been writing full time.
So you had two books. These were Bantam, and now Scribner's is publishing. Scribner's a wonderful house.
Yeah.
Well, so was Bantam. Bantam was paperback, and Scribner's hardcover. Are you going to be doing book appearances, book signings, anyplace?
Well, I had a signing at High Crimes last night. It sold a lot of books.
Congratulations.
I'm signing at the Tattered Cover next Thursday at the Low Dose store at 7 o'clock or 7:30.
It's always 7:30. So next Thursday, Tattered Cover, 7:30. The book is called Extreme Indifference. What did you have to find and what did you have to learn in order to write a manuscript that sold or a book that was, going to really generate a commitment from a publisher like Scribner, even a publisher like Bantam?
Well, I basically had to learn that a story has to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. There has to be characters that people can relate to, that have human failings, that are human in the truest sense of the word, and to construct it with a structure that doesn't collapse in the middle. I mean, I had to learn craft just from A to Z.
And how did you learn it?
Well, I learned it. I've never
did you read books? Did you get it from your editor? How did you get, first of all, Bantam to even publish the first book? What was it that caused, because they are inundated. Those publishers are all inundated, and they're all very cost conscious now.
Well, it took me a long time. I mean, I had a lot of rejections. I had to get an agent, and I just learned it. I have to learn everything in life the hard way. It's just the way I'm wired. So I never belonged to a writing group. I never took a writing class in my life. I read some craft books, and what I did was I tried to apply what I learned. And that's the thing that a lot of writers, aspiring writers, don't do. I mean, we all learn the same rules, but the real trick of learning them is to try to integrate them into your own experience and to apply them. And I took criticism very seriously and tried to get the most constructive things out of it. And bit by bit, I learned how to construct a story. And that's really what it was.
What does it take to really construct a story?
I think,
what was the surprising thing that you learned in story construction?
Well, I think one surprising thing I learned was that what was of interest to me wasn't necessarily of interest to other people.
Such as?
I wrote a manuscript about a male criminal defense lawyer. It was written in the first-person male voice. It never sold. And the thing about this lawyer was, he used method acting, Stanislavski's techniques, in order to get into his client's skin to project them to a jury. Now, I think that's the way successful trial lawyers work. They're the surrogate for the client. And lots of times the client doesn't take the stand for very good reasons, and the lawyer has to function as the stand-in for the client. So it seemed to me, conceptually, it made a lot of sense, but no publisher wanted it. I mean, they hated the hero, and I loved the hero. But he was a bit of an anti-hero, and I've always been attracted to anti-heroes. So one thing I've learned is that if you want to be accepted by a mainstream publisher, you have to have the hero be a little more sympathetic in traditional ways than, you know, what I was really, really excited about. But
don't lose that character. That character may resurrect himself someplace else. My guest is Stephanie Kane. Her new book is Extreme Indifference. It's subtitled A Crime Novel, and you can meet her at Tattered Cover Lodo next Thursday at 7:30. Stephanie, when it seems to me that the arc of your life has, and I think everybody does have an arc of their lives, but, you know, just going from corporate banking, which sounds so regimented, so regulated, so ritualized in a way, to you know, just throwing it all up in the air and thinking about the possibilities of medical school, and then criminal defense law, where you now have to become a litigator, where you now are trying cases and using some of these skills that sort of foreshadow what happens to you in the next chapter of your life, which is that you become a novelist.
Yeah.
Don't you think? The idea that you, as you described it, getting into your client's head. So you're getting now not into your client's heads, but you're getting into the your character's head. Who are creations, your creations?
Yeah, I think the arc has actually been logical in the illogical way that it's played out.
Did you have any idea that you were going to become a writer?
No. I had no aspirations.
No aspirations, no particular. Were you always writing? I mean, did you always scribble things?
Well, as a lawyer, I did write a lot. And especially as a corporate lawyer, I took a lot of pride in my writing, and I tried to write clearly and concisely. And I think that good writing is really just a function of clear thought and having something to say that you believe in. So in that sense, I was writing a lot as a lawyer, but I wasn't. I certainly wasn't writing fiction. I mean, I was massaging facts on occasion, but not writing fiction, out and out fiction. And that's
was that an out call, massaging of facts?
That's right.
Stephanie Kane, thank you so much for joining us today. The new book, Extreme Indifference, A Crime Novel. You can meet Stephanie Kane next Thursday, Tattered Cover, Lodo, 7:30. I'm Enid Goldstein. You are listening to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club on KNRC 1150.
Get your side, get their side. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hey, how are those juggling classes going?
Oh, great. I'm ready for the big time. Pass me those chainsaws, would you?
What?
Oh, no, I'm okay.
Now that's a bad decision. Fortunately, buying a GM-certified used vehicle that's fully reconditioned with a comprehensive limited warranty is always a good decision. GM-certified used vehicles. The right way, the right car. Qualified buyers get 3.9% APR financing on select GM-certified used vehicles from participating Chevrolet, Pontiac, Oldsmobile, Buick, and GMC dealers. Visit GMCertified.com for details.
Andre, you just got a world record price on a DVD player and a personal best online purchase time. How'd you do it?
I just stayed focused. Didn't try to click on the monkey's tail. Did what I had to do.
Were shipping costs a factor?
No, the conditions were good. Shipping was pretty much equal.
What about brand?
Brands are important, but I'm just taking it one day at a time.
There's a confidence that comes with getting a low price. That's comparison shopping, the new fashion way at Yahoo. Search, compare, and save at shopping.yahoo.com.
Yahoo!
KNRC cares about the health and well-being of our listeners and welcome you to tune in this Saturday from 6 to 9 a.m. and Sunday from 7:30 to 10 a.m. for a selection of fine programming committed to the betterment of your health. You'll hear about new and innovative products and programs that will allow you to lead a healthier and happier life. You'll also have immediate access to staff members who can answer your questions and assist in ensuring your personal needs. So join us Saturday and Sunday morning on AM 1150 KNRC.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
Shalom Denver has been serving the Denver business community since 1955 in the areas of mailing services, assembly, and packaging. Shalom provides employment, training, and job placement opportunities to people with disabilities, resettled immigrants, and people moving from welfare to work. If your business needs help with mailing services, packaging, or assembly work, contact Shalom Denver at 303-623-0251 or go online to www.shalomdenver.com.
Get up to a $1,000 rebate by mail on qualified Trane heating and cooling systems. Call Home Depot at Home Services at 1-800-79-DEPOT. License number available upon request.
Tickets are on sale now for the 2004 KeyBank Denver Distinguished Lecture Series, featuring the dynamic lineup of Her Majesty Queen Noor on January 20th, retired General Tommy Franks on March 30th, and Steve Forbes on May 17th. Tickets start at only $50 for the 3-lecture package and are on sale now. Go to www.denverlectureseries.com and expand your world by attending the 2004 KeyBank Distinguished Lecture Series, a program of junior achievement and sponsored in part by AM 1150 KNRC. You're listening to the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC. Here again, Enid Goldstein.
It's about 1:58 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. And we are coming to you live this fabulous Friday from the Denver Press Club. We do this once a month. And we usually have a theme. And the theme last month was film because the show coincided with the opening of the International Denver International Film Festival. And the theme in this broadcast is Literary Colorado. And if you're just tuning in, you've missed a lot of fabulous people, but there are still a lot of fabulous people left who will be joining us in the next hour. We have one more hour together. You've missed Pete Dexter, but you can catch him tonight. He is a National Book Award winning author. Paris Trout was the book he won the National Book Award for. He's got a brand new book out called Train. And you can meet him tonight at Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek at 7:30. And you also missed Sybil Downing and John Dunning and Phil Goodstein. But you're not too late for Mike Henry. He'll be joining us in the next hour, along with two reviewers, Dan Danbaum being one of them, also Christine Citron, who's the director of Colorado Center for the Book, Rick Ashton, who heads up the Denver Public Library, and who I think he should change his periodical collection system, but I'm sure he will be less than thrilled to hear this criticism from me, but he's coming up too. John Enslin will probably be talking to us, all that and more on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. Leave it right here. One more hour of Enid coming up on AM 1150 KNRC. We'll be talking about The Lighthouse and how you can learn to write better if you're a writer and all these continuing kinds of critiques and forms of education. And I'm all ears. I love what Mickey Spillane said. When he wanted to make money, he bought paper and pencil and started writing. Enid Goldstein.
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 2 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Mostly sunny and 60 degrees. I'm Chris Gallegos. This report brought to you by Kohl's. Eagle Crest High School in Aurora continues to be locked down due to what officials are calling an unsafe situation in the community. Tustin Amel with Cherry Creek says the incident isn't at the high school but nearby, and that Arapaho County Sheriff's deputies are on scene. Neighboring Thunder Ridge Middle School is not locked down. We'll continue to provide more details as we get them. The Jefferson County Sheriff's Office needs your help in finding a missing 13-year-old boy. Maximilian Plum was last seen at 6 this morning as he rode his mountain bike to Ken Carroll Middle School. He's described as 5'2", 195 pounds. He was wearing a black T-shirt, dark blue jeans, and a black helmet when last seen. The bike is described as a KHS dark blue or purple mountain-style bike. A former Denver radio personality faces 8 years behind bars after pleading guilty to receiving child pornography. This today from U.S. Attorney John Suthers. 50-year-old Dean Letzka, known better as Sam Hammer, was arrested on February 28th of this year after a package he was expecting containing child pornography was delivered to his home. Sentencing is scheduled for January 21st before District Judge Robert Blackburn. A 25-year-old woman is behind bars after an early morning car chase through Denver. Denver Police Detective Teresa Garcia said about 9 a.m., officers stopped a woman driving a stolen Dodge Neon at Dartmouth and Federal. The driver fled, and in doing so, ran over an officer's foot. The woman headed east on Dartmouth before running into a Ford Expedition at Zuni. Garcia says this woman could face some serious charges.
The original charge of driving the stolen vehicle, probably a fault to a police officer for injuring the officer, also eluding, disobeying a lawful order.
The driver of the Expedition was not hurt, but the 35-year-old passenger, Dennis Gonzalez, was taken to Denver Health and is currently listed in critical condition. The officer was treated at Denver Health and released. An American Special Ops soldier was killed in Afghanistan today after his vehicle was hit by a roadside bomb. The military says it happened near Asabad in eastern Afghanistan. No other details were available. More than 350 people, including civilians, Afghan troops, rebels, aid workers, and at least 11 Americans, have been killed in attacks since early August. It's the worst violence in Afghanistan since American-led forces overthrew the radical Islamic Taliban government 2 years ago.
In times of need, our nation counts on the Guard and Reserve members to fulfill their commitments of service. We value their courage, and we honor their sacrifice.
That was President Bush this morning as he signed a proclamation honoring employers who support the National Guard and the Reserves. Noting this is a time of war, Bush said it's vital that part-time soldiers have the support and understanding of their full-time employers. He said America's Guard and Reserve troops are now meeting the terrorists' enemy abroad so citizens don't have to face them at home. A newborn baby boy was found alive inside a trash dumpster in Hearst, Texas today. The infant was inside a plastic bag in a dumpster behind a veterinary clinic. An employee was throwing garbage into the dumpster this morning when she heard a whining noise coming from inside the trash bin. Hearst Police Chief Wynn Stanley says the worker then called the veterinarian to the dumpster.
He retrieved the plastic bag from the dumpster thinking that it was an injured animal. He took it into his clinic, and when he opened up the bag, he discovered a newborn, recently birthed male child, either African-American or Hispanic ethnicity, in the bag.
After opening the plastic bag, the vet discovered a newborn male with the umbilical cord still attached. The baby still had a warm body temperature despite being left in the dumpster. Cook Children's Medical Center in Fort Worth reports the baby is currently in good condition. In sports, a full slate of sports scheduled this weekend. The Nuggets kick things off tonight when they host Orlando at the Pepsi Center, and college football tomorrow. CU, CSU, and Air Force are all in action, and the Avs take on the Dallas Stars tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Of course, Sunday, Jake Plummer is back leading the Broncos against the Chargers at Invesco. Denver head coach Mike Shanahan says he's amazed what Chargers QB Doug Flutie did last week against Minnesota.
I'll tell you what, he amazes me what he's been able to accomplish. The way he played against Minnesota was, it was unbelievable. For all the guys that are under 5'10", he's a hero. For him to play at that level and make plays when there was nothing there and to be the type of leader he is amazing. I got a lot of respect for him.
Denver's looking to go 6-4 on the season with a win. Kohl's holiday sale is going on now. You'll find great savings for the holidays, plus save an extra 15% on everything each time you use your Kohl's charge through Monday. See store for details. Kohl's. Get happy. Get happy. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast up next. KNRC News Time is 2:05.
Oh, Larry, what a wonderful spot for our picnic.
Isn't it? The weather's just right.
Did someone say picnic? Hey, you're stepping on the goat cheese. Oops, so sorry. But I heard someone say picnic. And as the anniversary fairy for the Denver Center Theater Company, I must respond to emergency calls for tickets to picnic. So are you going?
Going? We're having the picnic now.
Mmm, yummy sandwiches. But I meant the play picnic. We're just trying to enjoy. Oh, wine.
Did you want something?
Yes. I want you to picture a small town in Kansas. A single mom and her two teenage daughters get ready for the big Labor Day picnic, and then a hunky drifter blows into town, and the sexual tension ignites. But if you'd rather just eat goat cheese...
Oh, no, no, we'll go see Picnic.
My work here is done.
Our 25th season is our best yet. Come celebrate at the Denver Center Theater Company with tickets to Picnic, opening October 16th. Call 303-893-4100.
KNRC News Time, 2:06. Time now to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is a service of Diamond Shamrock Corner Stores, and we're picking up a few accidents. Southbound I-25 in the Castle Rock area, two separate accidents, watch for delays. Also eastbound 88 at I-76, watch for a DUI accident. And up in the high country, eastbound I-70 right at the Copper Mountain exit, watch for an accident there as well. Drive into your neighborhood Diamond Shamrock Corner Store for a Sobe, non-carbonated exotic teas and juice blends. Sobe cans are two for $2 at Diamond Shamrock. Drive in, zip out. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Mike Stenifert with the KNRC forecast and the Weather Channel. Plenty of sunshine, breezy at times this afternoon. Fairly mild as we get up to a high near 60. Tonight, fair skies. Winds die down after sunset, low 28. A bad day on Saturday. Sunshine with a high in the mid to upper 50s. Cloud cover on Sunday and a bit cooler with a high in the low 50s. For the Weather Channel, I'm Mike Stenifert on AM 1150 KNRC.
And it is a great Friday afternoon, mostly sunny, 60 degrees. KNRC News Time 2:07. I'm Chris Gallegos. Our next news at 2:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
2:07, 7 minutes after 2 o'clock. Welcome to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and we are coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. The theme of the broadcast today is Literary Colorado, and let me tell you who we have scheduled in this hour. We'll be joined a little bit later by two reviewers, Robin Vidimos from the Denver Post and Dan Danbaum, who reviews from the Rocky, and also Christine Citron, Director of Colorado Center for the Book, Rick Ashton, Director of the Denver Public Library. Maybe a little time for John Enslin. And right now, joining us is Mike Henry. Hi, Mike. Thanks so much for coming in.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Mike is from the Lighthouse Writers Workshop. Will you tell us what the Lighthouse Writers Workshop's all about?
Well, we're basically an independent creative writing school for...
Will you talk right into the microphone?
Sure, sorry.
Okay, here you go. I can hardly hear you.
We're an independent creative writing school for adults here in Denver, and our main goal is to develop a community of fellow writers along the Front Range.
Okay, and what do you do to do that? You have classes and you bring authors in and workshops and stuff?
We have about, we have five sessions per year. We're basically like a graduate school without grades. So we have semesters for the year, and we have 10 instructors who work with us teaching in all genres from poetry, screenwriting, novel, short story, anything that anybody would
want. So if anybody is interested in learning how to hone their skills as a writer, I know you started about 7 years ago with zero students, and now you have, what, about 800 or so?
About 800 students per year, about 100 per session.
Okay. Now, if they want to register, how do they do it?
They can give us a call, or they can look on our website, which is lighthousewriters.com.
And what's the number to call?
303-297-1185.
303-297-1185. And they can find out what your schedule of classes is, and what does it cost?
The cost is for an 8-week workshop is $199 if you're a member, and it's $30 for a year's membership. And we also have occasional one-day intensive workshops, and those run around $70.
So it's fairly reasonably priced, it sounds like. And you've got an event at Tattered Cover tonight?
We do. We actually have Lee Gutkin coming in. He's the editor of Creative Nonfiction, and he's been called the godfather of creative nonfiction, which has also been called the fourth genre. And he'll be speaking at the Tattered Cover Lodo at 6:30 tonight, and that's free.
It's free. So,
yes.
And he is really a terrific writing teacher, too, is he not?
Yes, he's written books about the craft of creative nonfiction, and he's an editor, and he's just a good person to talk to if you're interested in writing personal essays or memoir, that sort of thing.
You and your wife, Andrea, have set up the Lighthouse Writers Workshop.
Yes.
You created that from scratch.
Yes, we met in graduate school. We were getting our MFAs in creative writing, and there's really no defined job track for that. So you can do the adjunct faculty teaching thing at, you know, a host of colleges around town. But it's
Gore Vidal said it well. He said teaching has ruined more writers than drink. So
very, very true. So we thought, you know, let's just do it on our own and see what happens. And it's been a wonderful experience.
Thank you for joining us, Mike Henry, the Lighthouse Writers Workshop. And again, the website is?
LighthouseWriters.com.
LighthouseWriters.com. So if you want to learn how to be a screenwriter, honing your skills in any writing, almost any writing genre,
yes,
that would be a place to start. Thanks so much, Mike, for telling us all about it. And now we're going to be joined by, if you have already written the book and you want to get some publicity for it, or you haven't written the book, but you have only a limited amount of time to read, and you want to know whether something is going to be worth that kind of a commitment, because we're in a society where if it's more than 5 minutes worth, it could result in divorce, then you want to read the reviewers that you trust. And having reviewed books for a variety of publications, but once in a while for the San Francisco Chronicle, I can tell you that a reviewer takes his or her work very seriously, and we're joined by two of them. We're joined by Robin Vidimos, who reviews for the Denver Post, and Dan Danbaum, who reviews for the Rocky Mountain News and is always in charge of the book drives for the press club. So welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
I'm happy to see you in your other persona here. I always see you in the book drive persona. Dan?
Oh, I have lots of personas.
I know it. I don't even want to know about the other ones. Talk to me about reviewing. Are there typical books that you tend to review?
I tend towards literary fiction, and I've got a real soft spot for crime fiction. Those would be my.
And what are you recommending in the way of both literary fiction these days and crime fiction?
Well, I recently finished The Great Fire by Shirley Hazard, which is one of the National Book Award finalists, and it's a remarkable book. In crime fiction, golly, you can't go wrong with Michael Connelly.
Really good.
He's
really good. Okay. Yes. And Dan, what do you typically review?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Connelly's just great. And a very nice man, too. I tend to review history.
Talk right into the microphone, because I'm having heart.
Okay.
History.
Yeah.
Which, what
I've just reviewed Sea of Glory by Nathaniel Philbrick. He wrote In the Heart of the Sea, which was about the whale ship Essex, and Moby Dick or Herman Melville was inspired by that incident to write Moby Dick. And Sea of Glory is about an expedition in the 1830s that was mounted by the U.S. Navy and actually led to the discovery of Antarctica. But it's faded into history, and that's really the interesting part of the story. So,
do you decide what books you're going to review, or do your editors assign you books?
I don't. I get assigned books, and my editor will. They always say if this looks like something you really don't want to do, send it back. But it's fairly rare I send a book back.
What about you, Dave?
And I pretty much get to pick my books. Every once in a while, Tom Walker, who's the book's editor, will ask me to review a specific book. But most of the time, I'm out there on my own.
Do either of you do other kinds of writing besides review? Book review?
Sure.
Because I always found when I was reviewing that it got in the way of other kinds of writing, because it uses a different part of your mind. It's a very critical part, and the other parts that I was more interested in use something more intuitive. Does anybody else find that to be the case, or was I the only one?
I would say that most of the writing I do outside of review kind of writing is like nonfiction grant writing. It's still the same kind of critical thinking, logical path writing.
I'll just say writing reviews is, I think, the worst paying writing.
Oh, well.
I haven't had to work so hard for $35 in a long time.
Is it $35 here?
Right. I don't know what it is at the Post, but that's what it is at the News.
You'll have to call the Post.
They're so proprietary.
Well, I'll tell you, my first book review was a Margaret Atwood book, the name of which escapes me. And I was sort of a new writer and was asked to review that book, and I hated it. I said it had the stench of ladies' fiction about it. My editor at the time was Pat Holt at the San Francisco Chronicle. And she was mortified that this new writer that she'd assigned to write a very, you know, well-known author, or review of very well-known, it came up with such a, and I said, look, I said, if you, I said, why don't you read it? And why don't we both review it? And if yours is positive, run it next to mine, which is negative. And it, that is exactly what happened. So that was how my book reviewing career took off, such as it was. But, let me ask you this question. When you are reviewing a book, I've noticed that it, your moods will have some definite effect on how this book strikes you. And how do you compensate for that for the reader?
I try and step away from the book as much as possible. Step away from my own personal, I don't know, emotional response to the book as much as possible, and put it in the perspective of what it's of its genre or what it's trying to be. I would judge crime fiction against other crime fiction, for example, and not necessarily hold it to the same kind of yardstick that I'd use for literary fiction. My what I'm trying to do in a review is not tell the reader whether or not I liked the book, because really, who cares? What I'm trying to do is give them the information that will let them judge whether or not they want to spend their time and money.
So you're giving them a sense of the book, but...
And trying to give them the yardstick and say what works and what doesn't,
Annie,
and why.
Annie Lamott, the writer, refers to Machiko Kakutani, the you know, headshed critic at the New York Times, as Bachiko, because she writes real tough reviews.
Well, she writes what she likes.
Well, she does, and she's very, she can be highly critical. I mean, she really, she mostly lets people have it. Rarely is there a non-cuffing you around review. Dan, do you want to respond?
When
you're doing a review, are you, you're inserting your opinions, aren't you?
Sure. You know, I think all reviews are subjective. I never set myself up to be a literary critic or an expert in what someone else has written, but if you don't have your opinion, you know, what else do you have? I will say this. You reminded me of a story. I have reviewed books a long time, and I've never heard from an author whose book I liked and whose book I said good things about.
But have you heard from the author who got the negative review? What do they say? Yeah. Do they write you directly? Because I never got one of those.
No, I had one sent a certified letter to the book editor at the Post.
With legal papers waving from
this
it.
This was funny. He ended up being the next-door neighbor of one of my college roommates, and I kept trying to get my roommate to say, oh, you're the guy who wrote that really bad book, right? But no.
I was once in Pat Holt's office at the Chronicle, and she was going to be tossing out some books. And I looked at one of them, and I said, you can't toss that out. Let me review it. It was Miss Manners, and it was her first book. And my sister had lived in Washington, D.C., so I would read Miss Manners, otherwise known as Judith Martin, in the Washington Post. And I loved those columns, so I wrote the review. I called her the Noel Coward of social advice, and I was happy to retail some of her good advice. And she, when somebody wrote into her and said, let's see, when meeting a gay couple, I don't know, let's see, how does this go? When meeting a gay couple, what should you say? And Miss Manners respond, how do you do? How do you do? The other piece of advice that she offered was, what do you do when you call a present lover by a former lover's name? Miss Manners responded, that's why the word darling was created. Hmm. So that was the fun that I had reviewing books. That, what are some of the surprises that you find in review? What are some of the delights of reviewing books? Are there any actually to speak of?
You get the books.
Well, yeah.
And I think it's kind of a neat feeling to get something before it's out and to be able to read a book that the public doesn't have access to yet.
Do you hear from your readers who thank you for turning them onto a book or an author?
Never.
Never? They don't think Never. To write the reviewer?
No, I hear from my friends from time to time. Because if I'm excited about a book, I press it on everyone I can see. And I do hear that, but no.
You don't hear from you, but you hear from occasionally from the disgruntled author.
Actually, no. I've never.
I never did either. Dan, you are. Before we say goodbye to each other, what are some of the, what would not readers not really realize about the life of a book reviewer or the work of book reviewing? It's very tough. I think it's a big responsibility and not terrifically remunerative. It takes a lot of time to do it well, I think. I always thought. Do you agree?
Yes.
Well, we put our pants on one arm at a time.
So. You know, I think the biggest secret when I've talked to people is that somehow there's a perception that there's a joy or some kind of fun in a negative review. And I haven't done very many of them, but I hate them. I hate them. It bothers me tremendously.
Well, you know, there's this, I have to say, they're the food critics, the English food critics, who are, I mean, they're out for blood. They write the most hideous negative reviews. There's a whole food mafia in this country, and they're all real nice to, each other, but not in England. In England, and I have to say that there were a couple of books that I reviewed that were so hideous that it was really a lot of fun to write the nasty review.
Well, I don't know. You know, there's only so
much. I thought they had it coming.
My experience is most editors really don't want to run reviews to books that they don't think people want to read. They want to run positive reviews.
Positive reviews, but what about the art of review, that the review itself is probably more worthwhile than the book it was reviewing? That edgy, witty. Right. Thank you both for joining me today. I really appreciate it. Dan Danbaum,
you're welcome,
from the Rocky Mountain News, and Robin Vitamos, who reviews books for the Denver Post. Look for their reviews. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club on AM 1150 KNRC.
Most people come from one school of thought. Welcome to the beauty of both sides. AM 1150 KNRC.
Are you tired of the weight loss battle? Do you find yourself feeling desperate to lose weight and keep it off? Listen to what UltraCarb users are saying about their experiences.
I've been on UltraCarb for 2 weeks. I've lost a total of 10 pounds, and I cannot believe it.
In the first 9 days since using UltraCarb, I lost 10 pounds. It's the only thing that's worked for me, and I am so excited to get down to my goal weight. Right now, I'm losing 20 pounds a month, and within 6 weeks, I'll have reached my goal. UltraCarb is amazing, and I would recommend it to anyone who really wants to lose this weight.
Whoever said losing weight has to be difficult has not used UltraCarb. UltraCarb works by blocking carbohydrates, the source of most weight gain. If you want to lose up to 20 pounds and 2 to 3 dress or pant sizes per month, call now. UltraCarb is 100% guaranteed to work or receive a full refund. Call now to look and feel better about yourself.
Call 1-800-451-6432 and find out how you can get 1 month free with your order. That's 1-800-451-6432.
Which vitamin C do you take? I hope it's Ester C. This is Larry King, and I take Ester C because it protects my whole body. Ester C supports my immune system, promotes the health of my heart, eyes, and joints, and it's gentle on my stomach. The metabolites in patented Ester C make it different than regular C. So do as I do. For whole body protection, take Ester C. E-S-T-E-R-C.
Look for Ester C at Vitamin World health food stores and everywhere vitamins are sold.
Being tough is her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
a good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug.
For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
You know, the thing about winning awards is that you have to say award-winning this and award-winning that. And frankly, it's very tiring for a voice talent like myself.
Here's your Mai Tai, sir.
Thanks. But just in case you didn't know, you can download clips of award-winning news features and guest interviews from our award-winning website, made by an award-winning designer featuring award-winning hosts. Well, it's true. KNRCRadio.com has it all. But if somebody at the station wins a Nobel Prize, I'm out of here.
Hi, this is Greg Dobbs. Join me every weekday morning from 6 to 10 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now, back to Enid Goldstein.
2:25 on the Fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. We do these broadcasts once a month, and they always have a theme. And today the theme is Literary Colorado. And joining me right now is Christine Citron, who is the director of Colorado Center for the Book. And we'll be joined by Rick Ashton, who's the director of the Denver Public Library. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Christine, talk to me about the Colorado Center for the Book. What is it exactly?
We are a nonprofit organization, the state affiliate of the Library of Congress. And our reason for existing is to encourage a love of reading and love of books. So Rick and I have a lot in common. And we own and operate out of the Thomas Hornsby Farrell House. And I think we're sitting right by here in the press club by, there's a picture of Thomas Hornsby Farrell. He was the poet laureate of Colorado, and he hung out here at the press club quite a lot.
When was he the poet laureate of Colorado?
He was the poet laureate from 1977, I believe, till when he died in 1988.
So we're right near his caricature.
Well, I'm not sure exactly. Oh, there he is.
Okay,
this is great. I'm right below it.
If you have never been to the Denver Press Club, they've done a really wonderful job of renovating it.
It is terrific.
And they have all these caricatures up, and we're among them.
we're sitting, I think, at a regular table, but somewhere in here there is a table, which is the Thomas Hornsby Farrell table.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well.
But anyway, what does that have to do with us? We're promoting literary activities and programs, and it's very appropriate that we do that out of Farrell's house, and we have a series of monthly poetry
Where meetings. Is Farrell's house again?
And this is at 21st and Downing, 2123 Downing.
Okay, and you have a bunch of activities?
Yeah, we carry on various different activities that are all designed to create a passion for books.
Such as
the Colorado Book Awards, which we just did. It's an ongoing thing, and this is a celebration of Colorado authors, of writers who live here in Colorado who've written books in the past year. And we've had about 200 books nominated each year, and then we narrow them down to finalists. And what I've showed you is there were 35 or 40 finalists in categories ranging from poetry, children's books, biography, history.
Walter Isaacson was your master of ceremonies here, wasn't he?
He was our guest speaker, and actually Reggie Rivers was our master of ceremonies.
Okay.
But I was going to mention another one of the finalists is another caricature much loved was Gene Amel.
Of course.
And he, as you'll see, I think the very first book listed there, he was a finalist for the category of memoir.
And the winners are?
And the winner for that category was another journalist who I think is a habitué here, Steve Jackson. So we're big on journalism. We love all kinds of writing. We also do children's writing, which we'll talk about in a little bit, too. But
we had Steve Jackson on. He wrote the book, The Lucky Lady. It was about World War II. I remember.
Yeah,
And who won the Colorado in the West?
And Colorado in the West was Craig Childs.
Soul of Nowhere,
which was, and he's been on the radio quite a bit. I'm not sure if you've had him yet, but you might want to.
So, okay.
These authors are wonderful speakers, and they all have a passion for their subjects, which range from Colorado in the West to mental health and spirituality to genre fiction, mystery, nonfiction, picture books. It's an incredible range. And just, it's so exciting. For instance, the author who won our young adult prize was Avi, who already had won a little prize this year, namely the Newbery Award.
Oh.
This is comparable to saying you've won the Nobel Prize.
Oh.
So Avi, who is a wonderful Denver writer, this is his 50th book, he won this prize.
Rick Ashton, you are the director of the Denver Public Library. I'm glad you could join us today, and you're a good sport for doing it, because I'm always cuffing you around. You probably know that.
You know, the Newbery Award for Children's Books is given by the American Library Association.
And are you also a member of... Yes, you are, of course.
Certainly.
All right. Talk to me about what it's like to run a big city public library.
Being city librarian at the Denver Public Library is like drinking out of a fire hose. We have a lot of fun every day with 3,000 people who come in the doors of the Central Library and about 2,000 people who come in the doors of all our 22 branch libraries every day. And so our middle name, Public, is what we live by.
Well, I love libraries, and I will do whatever I can to support libraries.
Thank you.
And sometimes that means I criticize them negatively, and sometimes it means I say many positive things. I love a lot of things about the Denver Public Library system, and I've become a user of it. But I'm not too fond of the periodical section at the main branch. You and I have talked about that, but I wish there were a way that you could display everything so that you could walk in and you could just see what the library offers, and they only just have a mimeoed sheet at the reference desk, and you can't really even just take it with you to see what their library offers, because it's so much fun to browse. Is there any way that that might change?
We have two areas in the Central Library, and I don't know if you've discovered both of them. On the ground floor in the Burnham Hoyt section, which is our popular library where we have fiction and new books and some of our media.
No, I don't think I've discovered that. That's on the main floor?
Right.
No, I've yet to discover that part. I'll go and look. It's very good.
We have an array of popular magazines that are to be checked out. And
you have that at Cherry Creek, too, and I love that.
Yes.
I love that those things are new magazines and they circulate immediately. I think that's just great.
And because that's very heavily used, at times that can be kind of a mess. To find something. On the third floor in our big magazine center, where we have most of our 4,000 subscriptions, we have the issues of space and organization and keeping things in good order. We have the current numbers of a selected group of our periodicals out on facing front display there. And the most heavily used things in there, by the way, are out-of-town newspapers.
You do have a wonderful selection of out-of-town. I think you've got do you not have the LA Times there?
Well,
Chicago,
I'm sure we do.
I think you do.
Yeah.
You don't have it at Cherry Creek, I don't think, but you've got it there, and you've got a lot of good papers. So that really is, but you get high marks for that one,
well,
too.
Well, thank you. And then in the huge stack area, of the periodical section, we box the current numbers.
That's where it's really confusing, because you don't know what you've got. It's only some of them are displayed. I couldn't determine, maybe I was just too impatient that day, I couldn't determine the order that they were to be in. It was hard to figure out what else you had. The way they're set up in the stacks, it really is not very inviting. And so to me, it was very confusing, and I had a real problem with it. And I went back a second time, too.
Well, I'd love to walk through that with you sometime.
I will do it with you.
I'm pretty sure they're in alphabetical order by
maybe
title.
I'm just too dopey to figure it out. But and my other criticism would be for Cherry Creek, and those are the only two I've been in, is Central and Cherry Creek. I like the way it's set up. Cherry Creek on the first floor. Second floor, not very many books. A lot of white space. Low shelves and not so many books. I'm used to libraries that are overflowing with books.
That's an architectural and engineering issue, Enid. That's a very interesting one. That library was built in the early 60s. The second floor was built as offices and meeting rooms. And it wasn't built to carry the load of bookshelves.
Oh, I see. So you can't do it.
So about 10 years ago, when we renovated that building, expanded it a bit, and converted those upper spaces, which had been used for offices and meeting rooms, to public space, we could only have shelves that are about 4.5 feet high.
I wondered why short shelves, not so many books. It seems like it's a little bit barren up there.
It's the structural issue of the building itself.
I see.
Now, if you were to visit the Thomas Hornsby Farrell House, I'm sure your immediate observation would be the opposite, that you've got so many books, you need some more shelves than we do.
Well,
we're not a library, but we and me personally am very heavy library user, and we adore the library.
I'm going to make a confession that I probably should not say on the air, but you know how you read those stories about people who have 5,000 cats in their house? I have that in books. It's getting to the point where I'm going to have to navigate a path.
Yeah, the Collier Brothers.
I mean, it's terrible.
Do you know
terrible.
The Collier Brothers
Who are the Collier Brothers?
Oh, yeah.
No, who is? What
do
is
you
it?
Want to tell the story?
No, I don't know.
The only good thing about the books is you don't have to feed them. They don't make a mess on the floor.
Well, what I was going to just, I thought people might be interested, talking about Colorado authors and these Colorado Book Awards, that if people do want to visit the Farrell House, we have all these books on display. And I know actually the Denver Public Library has all the books as well as lists of them. So
wait a minute. Can you check out? Do you have to be a member or something to check out books?
No, we are not a library, we don't check books out. I'm saying if people want to come in and look at the books written by Colorado authors, you can check books out from Denver Public Library, and we refer people there. But if they want to come and just see nothing but books written by Colorado authors, we've got them there arranged by categories and things like that.
Well, we'll talk more about the programs that you have so that people who are not so aware of what you do might be persuaded to come in the door. And the same for the public library. My guests in this segment, Christine Citron, director of the Colorado Center for the Book, and Rick Ashton, director of the Denver Public Library. I'm Enid Goldstein. You are listening to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club on AM 1150 KNRC. 2:35, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Chris Gallegos. Hi, Chris.
Hello. How are you, Enid?
Good, thanks.
Fantastic. Well, it is mostly sunny and 60 degrees. I am Chris Gallegos. This report brought to you by Kohl's. Eagle Crest High School in Aurora is still under lockdown. Arapahoe County Sheriff's deputies say the lockdown is merely a precaution in response to an incident near the school. We'll have comments on the lockdown from a sheriff's deputy at 3 o'clock. Another missing child in the Denver area. Denver police are looking for a 3-year-old missing boy since 11:45 this morning. He was last seen at a Burger King at 1680 East Colfax. He's wearing blue jeans, a green coat, and a gold baseball cap. His mother dropped him off at the restaurant with his uncle, who then lost sight of him. Meanwhile, the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department needs your help finding a missing boy last seen this morning as well, as he was riding his bike to Ken Carl Middle School. 13-year-old Maximilian Plum is described as 5'2", 195 pounds. He was wearing a black T-shirt, dark blue jeans, and a black helmet. The bike is described as a KHS dark blue or purple mountain bike. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche lost last night in overtime to Phoenix 3-2. They're back in action tomorrow hosting Dallas. Tonight, the Nuggets host Orlando at the Pepsi Center at 7 p.m. This spot brought to you by Kohl's. Kohl's holiday sale going on now. You'll find great savings for the holidays, plus save an extra 15% on everything each time you use your Kohl's charge through Monday. See store for details. Kohl's. Give happy. Get happy. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast up next. KNRC News Time 2:37.
There's a spot.
By the shopping carts?
Well, how about here?
Next to that rust bucket? Wait, there's one.
It's a little far away, isn't it?
Yeah, perfect.
You want to keep your car protected. No one understands that better than your State Farm agent. That's why we insure more cars than anyone else.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Providing insurance and financial services.
In a perfect world, batteries would be like you, recharged after a few hours rest. Power would go out only after you hit a switch. And your Walkman wouldn't be the one to run out of energy during a jog. But the world isn't perfect. And that's why there's Walgreens, with a wide selection of batteries that are perfect for all your electronics needs. That's life. This is Walgreens.
Need batteries? Try Walgreens brand. You'll get more power for your penny.
KNRC News Time, 2:38. Let's head over to Darren Copeland now in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is a service of Riceland Rice and Safeway. Got a couple problems. Southbound I-25 in the Castle Rock area. Watch for two accidents there, one with injuries. Trying to get it out of there. Also up in the high country, eastbound I-70 at the Copper Mountain exit. Watch for an accident there. And DUI accident, eastbound 88th at I-76. Need a new idea for dinner or for the satisfying side dish? Try cooking Riceland rice with chicken broth. Riceland, that's my rice. Look for savings on Riceland rice at Safeway. Safeway, giving our best. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Mike Stenifford with the KNRC Forecast and Weather Channel.
plenty of sunshine, a little bit breezy at times this afternoon. Temperatures very pleasant, though, as we get up to a high right around 60. Tonight, fair skies. The winds will die down after sunset. Our low down at 28. Nice day on Saturday. Sunshine with a high in the mid to upper 50s. Clouding up, turning a bit cooler on Sunday, a high in the low 50s. For the Weather Channel, I'm Mike Stiniford on AM 1150 KNRC.
And it is a beautiful Friday afternoon, mostly sunny, 60 degrees. KNRC News Time, 2:39. I'm Chris Gallegos. Our next news at 3 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Puppetry of the Penis, the international hit comedy that everyone is talking about.
It was hysterical. I haven't laughed that hard in a really long time.
Inspiring.
Funny. Very good. Nothing I haven't seen before, but very good. It was hysterical. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. Entertaining. It was great to bring my husband, one of the few men here, tonight. It was great.
I look thankful.
These two naked Aussies achieve a lunatic virtuosity, sending audiences into hysterics in New York and London. Now Denver audiences are roaring with laughter. The Penis extends at the new Denver Civic Theater, 721 Santa Fe Drive. A once-in-a-lifetime experience. It's hard to resist the good-natured silliness, raves variety. Don't miss this hilarious phenomenon. The Philadelphia Inquirer raves it's good, clean fun.
Hurry and get your tickets to Puppetry of the Penis. The last performance in Denver is November 23rd. Select fast.
Girl, can you imagine the guy sitting next to you just crossing his legs going, no, no, no.
Puppetry of the Penis. Reserve seats on sale now at Tickets West Outlets, TicketsWest.com, and the Denver Civic Theater box office. It's like nothing you've ever seen.
KNRC Market Watch.
Wall Street's major indexes finished in the red following some mixed economic news. Reports showed a bigger-than-expected rise in wholesale inflation, a larger-than-expected drop in retail sales, and a gain in consumer confidence. Let's take a look at those numbers now. The Dow Industrials lost 69 points to 97.69. The NASDAQ fell 37 points to 19.30. The S&P 500 shed 8 points to 1,050. Big board volume was about 1.3 billion shares. Decliners beating advancers by roughly 3-to-2 margin. Intel, the Dow's worst percentage performer and one of many tech losers, sliding about 4%. A Japanese business newspaper reporting Intel teaming up with NTT Docomo to develop new chips for mobile phones. Drug stocks, though, had a good day as Congress hammers out a $400 billion Medicare drug plan. Johnson & Johnson, the Dow's top performer, rising 4%. I'm Steve Orr from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
242 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. The focus of today's broadcast is literary Colorado, Colorado authors, writers, although we included for a day a literary Coloradan for a day, Pete Dexter, and you can meet him tonight at Tattered Cover Cherry Creek at 7:30. With me in this segment, Rick Ashton, who is the director of the Denver Public Library, and also Christine Citron, director of Colorado Center for the Book. Christine, you handed me all these materials. Let me just ask you something. For people who aren't so aware of what you do, how can they get involved? Do you have programs? Do you have outreach? What do you offer people?
We offer them programs and outreach and membership. We're nonprofit and we're not state or federal funded. So we have a website, www.coloradocenterforthebook.org. Our phone number is 303-839-8320. We rely heavily on volunteers. We're always looking for volunteers. I've left a volunteer in my office right now faxing out to teachers about our children's writing. I have a volunteer coming in tomorrow. We rely for the book awards on 65 volunteer readers who judge the books, one of whom was on your program moments before I got on today.
Who was that?
Robin.
Oh, Robin. Okay,
she's
Robin.
Readers.
All right, so yeah. To encourage reading, what sort of programs do you offer for teachers and parents who want to encourage their children to read?
I'm glad you asked, because Letters About Literature, which is what you're holding, is a national program presented by the Library of Congress, and it invites children to write a letter to an author, children 4th grade to 12th grade. So it's Dear George Orwell or Dear Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Oh, that's a wonderful idea.
It's really fabulous. And it's not a book report. It's about a book that changed your life. Our motto is books give us wings. And this thing is about how a book gets you through, just changes your outlook on life, gets you through a trauma, opens up new vistas for you. And these essays that the children have written are unbelievably powerful and beautifully written. And we have an award ceremony at the Governor's Mansion every spring, and it's very inspirational. These children, what they write is really remarkable. And it does show that my own philosophy, that books are like breathing, that you need a book. You just need to always be.
Books are also friends. I think Nancy Reagan said something about if you have a book, you always have a friend. And I grew up way out in the country on a farm where there were no children very close by, and books were always my friend.
And that's what we've discovered through this program, Letters About Literature. There's a national, it's on the Library of Congress website as well.
Rick, you've got something cooking tomorrow night, an annual event, a big black tie event. What is it?
It's the 6th annual Book Lovers Ball, and we're very excited. 650 of our closest friends will gather for an evening of fun with dinner and dancing. It's a unique black tie event in Denver. There are no speeches, no awards, no silent auction, just a wonderful party.
Well, there won't be anything to endure.
Oh, it will be wonderful. The partner for this is WB2 and the McCormick Tribune Foundation of Chicago, who will do a partial match for the funds that are raised.
I do occasionally do some writing for the Chicago Tribune and have been on some of their, WGN, some of their stations.
You ought to have a whole program about the McCormick Tribune Foundation.
Why are they funding this? Is it libraries generally?
Well, they are very involved with several organizations here in Denver, both of our newspapers, our sports team, Channel 2, as philanthropic partners. And one of the things that they do in several cities around the country, including Denver, is act as a matching challenge entity for special events such as the Book Lovers Ball. So they've been a sponsor of ours for the past several years, and their generosity.
They underwrite the ball?
Do a partial match of the net proceeds of the ball. So,
and you're hoping to bring in how much?
So the total, including their support, we estimate will be about $250,000. And that will buy books for kids. That's it, directly where it goes.
You've been under some fire recently, Friends of the Library. Talk to me about that. Has that rift healed at all, or is it still in rift stage?
The Denver Public Library Friends Foundation is our citizen support group. They've been in business since 1940 in various forms, one of the oldest library friends groups in the country. And about a year ago, the board of the Friends Foundation made a business decision to focus on management of the library's endowment and private funds as their primary activity, and to not be directly involved in the fundraising activity, such as the Book Lovers Ball, because of the business impact of the Friends having a large staff. They had built up a staff of about 6 or 7 people, and it was really costing quite a bit to raise money. So with volunteer assistance,
they were doing the book sales, weren't they not? Have you taken that over, the library?
With a great deal of volunteer assistance, about a month ago, we had a big 2-day book sale at the Central Library, and we had about 300 volunteers who put in about 3,000 hours of labor, and brought in about $44,000 in a 2-day sale that had very little overhead cost associated with it. So that activity is one which library staff have always been involved in, because the books for the sale come from the library and from books that are
donations?
Given to the and from books that are given to the library, and we're very grateful for
people
to give those.
Do you not do a book drive, where you get donations from the community and use those in the book sale?
We receive books all the time. time, and then we occasionally do have a book drive during a period. Last summer, for example, 99.5 The Mountain did a promotional book drive for about 3 or 4 weeks in June, where we were on the air with them, and they also did a little fundraiser.
Because you and I were on the air together, and I would I get tons of books from publishers, many of which I donate here to the press club because they have a book sale. But I asked you whether or not what we could do for you as a radio station, whether we could get our listeners to donate, and I recall your answer to me along the lines of that unless they were really new books, that wasn't going to work for you.
As far as books to put in the collection, that probably would be so.
No,
but books that can be sold, that would be a great help. We appreciate it. In fact, if we could get about 50 extra copies of The Da Vinci Code right now, we'd cut that waiting list way down.
I have the author on. He's great. He was wonderful, Dan Brown.
We accept donated books too. In fact, right now we're using some donated books as an incentive to teachers if they'll give us enter their children in our writing.
What kind of donated books do you look for? Any particular?
Well, particularly children's.
Children's,
to give to literacy projects.
I am delighted to have both of you on today. Thank you so much.
Thank
you. Clock has caught us, or we could sit here and talk for much longer. Christine Citron, Director for Colorado Center for the Book, and Rick Ashton, who is the Director of the Denver Public Library. Thank you so much for coming on to the show today.
Thank you.
I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club.
Call the host you don't agree with. Keep both sides alive and well on AM 1150 KNRC.
Mom, Dad and I are off to the grocery and office supply store.
And I'm hitting the mall.
No, you're not.
What?
Huh? We're going to Sam's Club for their special open house weekend.
Don't we have to be members?
Yes, but this open house is special, so everyone's welcome. Grab the kids and we can get everything we need in one place.
Great. More family togetherness.
This holiday, make it your business to shop and save at Sam's Club. You're invited to the Holiday Taste of Sam's Club open house November 14th through 16th. Sample delicious foods, do all your holiday shopping at low warehouse prices. Join today and save all year. Sam's Club. We're in business for small business.
I had a bad headache. I tried Advil Liquid Gels. They work faster than Tylenol.
I needed stronger medicine, and Advil Liquid Gels get that medicine to my headache faster.
I get better relief with Advil Liquid Gels.
Every day, more people are choosing Advil Liquid Gels to relieve tough headache pain. Advil has these advanced capsules with liquid medicine inside to rush relief where you need it. Proven faster, stronger, better than Tylenol.
Now, every time I get a tough headache, I choose Advil Liquid Gels.
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
Out here, the checkered flag means someone's about to win. And right now, at participating Goodyear retailers, the checkered flag means all Goodyear brand tires are on sale. Race to the finish and save big on a wide selection of Goodyear's most popular tires. And when you buy 4 selected Goodyear tires, you'll get up to $75 cash from a mail-in rebate. For complete details, call 1-800-GOODYEAR or visit any participating Goodyear retailer. But hurry, because on December 6th, this offer and big tire sale is finished.
KNRC Community Commitment.
Hi, this is Doug Kellett. Art and Reach is a Colorado nonprofit arts and human services organization dedicated to changing lives through the arts. Working with 230 agencies serving at risk or underserved children, adults, and seniors, Art and Reach programs touch over 60,000 people in the Denver area. Support Art and Reach by attending the 2003 Festival of Trees, November 15th through the 30th, at the Wildlife Experience located at Peoria and Lincoln Avenue. For information, go to artreachdenver.org.
There are people who buy Halloween candy the day after Halloween, and wrapping paper the day after Christmas. They shop for summer clothes during winter and winter clothes during summer. These people are smart shoppers. They think ahead and always get the deals. One way to learn from them is to buy next season's Rocky Mountain Super Pass to Winter Park Mary Jane and Copper Mountain on sale now for only $319. The Super Pass includes the family-friendly atmosphere of Winter Park, the challenge of Mary Jane's legendary bumps, and the intense action of Copper's Super Pipe. No restrictions, no blackouts. But you have to get it now. Not this summer, not this fall, but right now. Visit SkiWinterPark.com or call 800-977-SNOW and get the best of Colorado for $319. Do something different, something better. Get a Super Pass on sale now through May 4th. Winter Park Mary Jane Pass is also on sale. Visit skiwinterpark.com or call 800-977-SNOW. Limited time offer while supplies last. Winter Park Resort, Colorado's favorite.
Join AM 1150 KNRC as we celebrate the holiday season by giving toys to children in need. Just go to your local Starbucks between now and December 25th and drop off a new unwrapped toy. You'll support the Holiday Angels Toy Drive, benefiting the Starlight Children's Foundation. The toys will be given to children who are being treated in hospitals across Colorado for serious illnesses. So donate a toy today at your local Starbucks store and help brighten the smile of a seriously ill child this holiday season.
Hi, this is Bill O'Reilly. Join me live every weekday morning from 10 till noon here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
2:54 on the fabulous edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. Did I say the Fabulous Friday edition or just the Fabulous edition? Well, I meant Fabulous Friday. And with me is the president of the Denver Press Club, the guy who puts all of our shows that we do live from the Press Club. It's John Enslin, who's the president of the Denver Press Club and also reporter for the Rocky Mountain News. He's the guy who puts together the whole guest list. He acts as the producer of the show, and he always comes up with the best people, people that I probably, it wouldn't even occur to me. And because I'm so new, I wouldn't really even know. You always do a fabulous job, as you have done today. So thank you, John Enslin.
Well, thank you, Enid. It's kind of like doing a jigsaw puzzle. You just kind of pull the pieces together, and then you put them together.
Well, such as it is. Yeah. And I'm the crazy glue that puts it together.
That's right.
Tell me what's cooking at the Press Club. What do you have coming up?
Let's start with something that actually happened already today. That involves the station. We did something remarkable this morning at the state of Colorado, as we do, every Friday morning. And just like your show, we do it here once a month. But today, something else happened. We had Channel 8, Denver's cable channel, came and videotaped it. So this is a program, mind you, that started on the air like 27 years ago when Don Kinney, who you can see up here on the wall, caricature.
This is the wall of shame.
Right.
Don Kinney will be on this wall somewhere, okay.
Right. Don Kinney ran the show for 25 years on Channel 6. Then it went off the air. And
oh, there he is. Here he is.
Yeah. Kind of like the Brainiac picture there.
Uh-huh.
But Don ran it for 25 years on Channel 6, and when it went off the air, that's how it came to KNRC. Well, today it's going back on the air because Channel 8 has taped it, and they're going to show it on Sunday at 1 p.m.
And I hear you had a lot to do with figuring out the right way to get that finally to happen. You had a really good idea, and thank you, John Enslin.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. And keeping in with our theme, too, of literary Colorado, we do have a good literary event coming up on Monday that I'd highly recommend to you.
What is it?
A gifted journalist for the Washington Post named Will Haygood.
Just so happens we're also going to have him.
Oh, you're going to try.
So we,
you're going to love
we get your, we get your after the
aftermath.
The book, yeah, at the book beat, we get it as dessert. You have a book beat luncheon.
Yeah.
And I want to let people know, as I always do, you don't have to be a member of the Denver Press Club to come over. It just costs $3 more. So if you're a member, it's $15. And we have a wonderful chef here at the Press Club, Daniel Young. He does a great job. I've been scarfing down his food in the breaks here. I get a bite every break, and
by
so
way,
it's
have,
taken me 3 hours to do my sandwich.
I have two words for you: butternut squash soup. That's three words, I guess. You got to have his soup.
It's, oh, really? Oh, well, his sweet corn. I got the recipe for how to do that. Anyway, so a book beat luncheon.
Yeah,
Will Haygood, who is a Washington Post style section reporter. He has done a biography of Sammy Davis Jr. You say, well, why do we care about him? Well, we care about him because he led a public life that was very different from the private life, and he was part of that Frank Sinatra, Rat Pack, Dean Martin kind of a sensibility. And they just remade Ocean's 11 with George Clooney. So, I think he's going to be very interested. Interesting. I'm looking forward to meeting him, and you can meet him here at noon.
You can have lunch with him here.
Have lunch
on Monday, and all you have to do to make a reservation is call 303-571-5260.
What else do you have coming up?
We've got the book sale coming up again.
When is that coming up? I have to get my books together so that I can donate.
Yeah, well, let's see. That will be the second Saturday in December. for the, in terms of the public.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that's the 13th, if I'm not mistaken.
Of December, where it opens?
Where it opens to the public on a Saturday morning.
Saturday morning, but if you're a member of the press club, and you can become a member without being a journalist.
Exactly.
And it's pretty reasonable.
$200.
$200 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to mingle with the likes of John Anslin.
Well,
and so forth. And
I
so forth.
Spend $200 on that.
But it's great. The club is great, and the activities are great, and you don't actually have to be a member to partake of many.